In the morning, I'm sure everybody is aware of the developments that are taking place in the country, and the nature of business of parliament is political, and so if there are other meetings that need to be attended to by the politicians who serve in this committee, it then becomes difficult for meetings to continue. So we were asked by the House Chairperson responsible for committees to postpone meetings of portfolio committees to the afternoon, which we acceded to. Let us then apologize for any inconvenience caused by that. We have called this meeting to get three briefings from the department. The first briefing is on progress in the establishment of an enterprise development fund as per Resolution 54 of the tracking document. We have developed a tracking document which indicates the resolutions that we have taken as a portfolio committee, and that presentation relates to Resolution number 54. We will then have deliberations. After that, we will have a briefing by the Department of Small Business on progress in the reviewing transfer of payments as per Resolution 55 of the tracking document. That will also be followed by deliberation. And the last presentation will be a briefing by Department of Small Business, briefing by the Small Enterprise Finance Agency on its business rescue strategy in general and the remedial action on litigated projects of the Free State in particular. Can we then move to item number 2 and take apology? Honorable Mwabe.
Thank you, Chair. It's not an apology per se. I would request to be excused for at least 5 minutes. When I joined the meeting, I was here in the Max building, so I quickly came here. I still had to go to my office, pick up my stuff, my coat, and lock the office and come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members, and good afternoon, colleagues. Chair, I've got apologies that I have received. It is from Honorable Mutembo, who is attending the classes. I also received an apology of Honorable Bewa, an apology of Honorable Dex, and the apology of Honorable Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. And then I also received an apology from Reverend KRJ Mishwe, who was to join the meeting later, but he decided to start the meeting and then leave after it departed at 3:15. So those are the apologies that I've received, and the minister sent an apology, and then they said she'll be coming, I'm no longer sure. So those are the apologies that I've received.
Yes, that's correct. Just shortly before I came here, there was a message from the ministry. That minister is on the way to the meeting.
Thank you very much. Can we accept those apologies? Can we then move to the first item? which is the briefing by the Department of Small Business Development on progress in the establishment of an enterprise development fund. Over to you, DJ.
Chairperson, good afternoon. I don't know if it's appropriate to say Happy Valentine's Day. I think we all need a bit of love. The chairperson, we work with a tracking tool all the time, and we were initially not clear what was required, and tried to get clarity. So we had prepared a presentation on the, firstly, on, you know, the SMME Innovation Fund that was announced. And then we realized that is not what was required, that this is a historical matter. And I think it was early that it's been on the agenda since about 2014. And my colleagues then advised me that it was something which the department was working together with CIFA on it, and if our understanding is correct, as I've just said, then CIFA will do the update on the establishment of an enterprise development fund. So I'm just seeking chair direction if that is the way you want us to proceed.
Can the content advisor speak on this matter?
Good afternoon, honourable members. Chair, my apologies. I'm not clear, DG. The tracking tool. In fact, no one from the department called me to seek clarity on this particular matter. But in terms of our tracking tool, we do have this as one of the recommendations of the portfolio committee. In fact, I remember Chairperson and Honorable Chance have spoken at length around this Enterprise Development Fund. So I'm not really sure what is not clear with regards to this resolution.
Chairperson, I'm not sure how to respond to that, but I'll ask my colleague, the CEO of CIFA, to proceed.
Just before we start with the presentation, this tracking tool, surely it can get updated, you know, as resolutions coming in. Are we going to receive it on a quarterly base, copies of it, weekly base? Because I think we need to be updated on it as well. And I can't remember when last did we get a copy of this tracking tool. So if I can then request that we get a copy of it after the meeting or so, just email it to everybody, if it's possible.
Trying to assist members as well as the department and CIFA on what resolution is. Resolution 54, the tracking tool. So what I've then done, I've asked the committee secretary to retrieve the document and just plug it up here, so that by the time they first speak, we know what is it that they were supposed to be speaking to. What we would also appreciate is that if and when the department is expected to report on something and they are not clear, can they then revert to the office and get clarity? What was the issue? I'm reading what is on the Title II. What was the issue was that the department was to initiate discussions with the DFI and the private sector financial players as to how they can establish a venture or a startup capital fund. That was the issue. And that was to be done by the fourth quarter of 2015-2016 financial year. Okay. Then, what was then reported to the portfolio committee then was that the department was in the process of establishing an enterprise development fund, which was going to be geared towards supporting startup businesses. That fund was going to be implemented by CIFA once the agency had received its BEP facilitator status. That is what we are expecting today to get a report on. Based on what was given to us by the department as to how it was going to be approached, the issue of establishing the fund, and also how it was going to be, who was going to be responsible for the implementation. That's where we are. So what we are expecting today is to get a progress report in as far as the establishment of that fund and where we are now, because it appears on the tracking tool as something that had not been achieved by the fourth quarter of 2015-2016 financial year. Can we then, I think everybody is clear now, there is no more need for you to retrieve that key, can then allow the CEO of CIFA to continue the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Chairperson and honourable members, for the opportunity to come here and give an update on what we done on the ESD fund. I must state from the onset that the update is not a positive one. In terms of what we have been trying to do over this period since the tracking tool. before I go into that, I just want to take members through what is it that we have been trying to do, as the chairperson did give a preamble. We believe that since there is not enough funding allocation from the fiscal CIFA, and the department need to go out to source opportunities from the private sector to give their funds to institutions like CIFA, so that we can manage those funds on their behalf. By so doing, they benefit in terms of acquiring the BE status in terms of their codes. So what we needed to do from ourselves was to engage with the DTI that gives us the association status. So, but to start with the first line, the aim for us, as I said, is to try to create these linkages with the private sector, so that we can have funds to support the small businesses. This needs to encompass the partnership that we need to build with large corporates, who some of them already have their social corporate social investment, they've got ESG money, but because they are not participating in lending to small businesses, us as an institution, institution of government for that matter, we can then be able to help by receiving those funds and then support the small businesses. So that then entails the development of strategies to empower the suppliers by offering business skills, digital skills, funding, among others, so that we can support the industries at the DFI. So our plan has been to really partner with technical experts, strategic industry bodies, and then other DFIs like the IDC, the NEF, and also provincial development finance institutions, and those that are also providing non-financial support, like our sister agency, CEDA. So the management of fund, by way of example, from CIFA, there has been when funds are received from the public, for example, from the state organization, it tends to be much, much easier in terms of that process. We have, for more than 10 years now, for example, been managing the fund. We call it Land Reform Empowerment Fund on behalf of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform to really support those that are in the agricultural space to buy machines, to also use it for working capital. We are currently in the process of commencement with the management of the fund. This is the EU fund that has been given to the government and then as a grant to come to CIFA for 30 million euros as well as 5 million euros for technical assistance, so that CIFA can then be able to manage that funds to support small businesses. That does not require the formalities of the ESD fund that we are looking for. I'm just giving this as an example. So we believe as an organization of states, we are best placed to manage this this type of funds. If you go to slide two, I try and give it a preamble that because there is no funding allocation, limitless as it were, we believe that us being given this funds by the private sector to do a variety of activities, it will be able to really assist in increasing the economic activity and also address the challenges that we face in the country. And then we want to utilize, because us having been an organization with a variety of access points, we believe that we can then utilize the infrastructure that we have to support SMMEs that are and cooperatives that are residing throughout the country by partnering with a multiple of organizations to do this exercise. So I did mention as well, if you see on the slide, the land reform that we already have. So we also of the view that by so doing we'll be able to promote the service delivery model for CIFA and CEDA, while we provide finance to these SMEs and co-ops, while the CEDA, our sister agency, is helping with the non-financial support, including training, among other things. But the biggest bottleneck for this, which has been frustrating for us for a very long time, is that we have launched almost over a year now an application to be accredited as a BBBE facilitator to the Department of Trade and Industry. For one to be accredited, we need to submit a variety of information. CIFA, by the time when we launched this, we in terms of the normal BE status, we were level 3. We have just been recently moved to level 1. But for our application to be then processed by the DTI, there are a number of activities that take place, which we have launched. That the only thing that we are waiting from our side is to get that facilitator status. Before we can obtain the BBBE facilitator status, we are unable to commence with the fund and do the necessary registration of the fund with the authorities like the Master of High Court, etc. So, Honorable Chairperson, really, the DG tried to engage with them on our behalf together with the DG of the DTI, but this process has been taking very, very long. Maybe the DG can just maybe highlight in terms of what would be the bottlenecks in that regard, but we have been waiting. It's taking much longer than we anticipated. So that is really the progress thus far. It's not good, as I indicated, Honorable Chairperson.
As you indicated when you gave the background, this has been on the cards for a while. I think it's been on the cards even before I took office. And because it was sort of quarter after quarter, CIFA would be reporting that they're still awaiting a response from the DTI. We intervened from our office. We did verbally engage, but eventually put something in writing. And our written application hasn't yielded any response. The DTI had a few engagements with CIFA, the clarity I got this morning from the DG of, just earlier, from the DG of DTI, is that the Act is very, very specific around the granting of BEE facilitator status. And it's not something that is done by officials, but something that is done by the Minister of Trade and Industry, because there's such high risk associated with it. And he gave, for example, examples how the status was awarded to one of the DFIs, and who through their partnership thus with particular companies almost compromised the they are, in fact, once the IDC has taken a share in a deal with an entity, with a business, they are able to award BEE points. It would appear then, from what I'm hearing now, because this is the first clear communication that I got from the DTI, that while CIFA has been waiting on the facilitator status to proceed, according to DTI, the Act is very specific. You have to register the fund, and you have to show the articles of incorporation, etc., etc., and they will then consider that and put very strict provisions around. But this, what I'm saying now, has never been communicated in writing to ourselves or the CIFA. And you certainly will follow up on that, because my question to them was, here is a public entity, it's wholly owned by government, Why are we required to jump through the hoops like everybody else? And the clarification that's given was just what I have shared. So I think that we need to go back, and I'm sorry that awareness is only here now, when this has been a matter outstanding, a report that's been outstanding to the committee for a long time. But we will have to go back to the drawing table. I just checked with the CEO and said, what I'm telling you now, have you had that engagement? Have you personally sat with the DTI? And there hasn't been that engagement. Because we might have to go through a different route. And for me, the lesson out of this is, I mean, one of the ways in which we undermine our own mandate and not end up doing what we can, but it's supposed to, is because we follow just one track, and we just don't follow different alternatives. And so we sit waiting on this, and when in fact the advice now is, it's the other way around to what our thinking was. So as my colleague says, it's not a positive progress report, and it doesn't reflect very well on us, and all I can ask for is for time so we can facilitate that formal meeting and also get both our and see first legal teams who firstly study the BEE legislation. And when we have a formal engagement with DTI, that we are to it from an informed perspective. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. Thanks for the input. The clarity I wanted is on page 3, bullet 3. If more flesh could be given to that. And then my second question is, what is the difference between what DTI offers and what the Department of Labor offers with regard to this licensing that's being granted? those are my two questions, Comrade Chair. But overall, who benefits at the end? Let's assume everything goes the right way. Can a little bit of an explanation be given as to the accruing of benefits?
Sorry for this disturbance. We have a gentleman next to the door from the Sound and Vision. He has come to fix something here because this meeting is being broadcasted, but the sound is not going out to them. So yes, he's requesting that we break for 5 minutes so that he can fix it. Can we have that break? Yeah, there is water and refreshments there. Before we continue, can we welcome the Deputy Minister who has just joined us? Thank you, Mama. Any other Honourable Chan, followed by Honourable Fuga.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I do have some questions for the CEO of CIFA. First of all, could he explain to the committee what is meant by facilitator status and what it entails to become a facilitator? And if that is the cause of the blockage, why has it taken so long to obtain facilitator status? The second question is, in the intervening months, What steps has the CEO or CIFA taken to approach the private sector and other donors of funds in preparation for the establishment of the fund, and what is the outcome of those discussions, if any, in terms of the amount of money that has been pledged and from whom? The other thing is, most ED funds in corporates is grant funding, for which there is no return expected. Now, CIFA is a lending organization which expects its loans to be repaid with interest. So the question then becomes, what is the nature of the arrangement that you are anticipating with your donors, your corporate donors, who are wanting to get points from their donations to you, and that's why you need the BE status and the fund status, because otherwise they can't get the points. Are you expecting to pay them back? Are you expecting to pay them with interest? What happens if your clients don't pay the money back? What I'm getting at is, what are the sort of arrangements that you're expecting with your donors to account for the money that you're receiving from them as a result of your fund being set up? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the short presentation. Madam Chair, money, it seems like capital earmarked for enterprise development in the government is lying around in each department. And I know we had discussions in the past about this. And the answer we get is about this transversal agreements between the departments, and we're just the facilitators and what. But I'm also on the agriculture committee, and I ask specific to the department if there's any agreement between this department and their department, and there's no agreement at all. So my question is then, what is the department doing to make sure that all the capital, all the money that's spent on small business development, it's actually spent on small business development? Because it seems like it's the new in thing in government to put money aside for small business development. And I'm not sure that those money are ending in the right directions. You know, I think it lands in wrong pockets. So I just want to know, what is the department doing to make sure that we utilize the money spent on, or so-called money spent on small business, are spent on small business? Thank you.
Can we get the response from the department and the CEO of CIFA?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will start to respond with the first question, as to the clarity on page 3, the bullet number 3, the clarity on the CIFA partnership track record from multiple instruments. Over the years, I did mention earlier, Chair, that as an example, that we have partnered with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform over a period of more than 10 years now through our predecessor institution to manage a fund, we call it ALREF, Land Reform Empowerment Fund, where CIFA has been given the role to manage the fund, identifying the enterprises that needed to be supported. For those, some of them would have been the beneficiaries of the land claims. Some of them would have been those that are looking for machination, plant equipment, tractors, among others, and their working capital. We have been, that's one of the examples of when we're talking about the CIFA's partnership track record. The other fund, for a number of years, we've partnered with Anglo Zimele,
It used to be called in the past Anglo-American Kula Mining Fund. It's now called Anglo-Zimele Sifa Mining Fund, where in that fund, which we inherited to our predecessor institution, Kula, Sifa put 100 million, and then Anglo put 100 million. So that fund, the first, it went well in the first round, and we then recapitalized it again with 100 million each from Sifa and Anglo Zimele. It's running into its towards the end of the term. That fund helps the emerging miners, small scale miners, who either want to do exploration, who want to do the drilling and then identify the minerals on the ground. That's one of the partnerships that we had in that. We will talk about track record. The other relationship was a tripartite between Sifa, Transnet, as well as Anglo Zimele, and then on that fund, it benefits those that would have supplied contracts to Transnet, either locomotives, either fuel, anything that Transnet will require. We have also partnered in the informal, let's say, the microspace with the Coca-Cola Beverage South Africa, with a project that we call Business in a Box. This entails it's a sort of a spaza shop type of a business where we support the small enterprises to run their business activities in a containerized type of spaza shop. Where we have done that in the area of Tabong and Meloding and Masilo around Rustenburg area.
Sorry, can you help me understand which question are you responding to?
I think the question was saying CIFA's partnership track record. I was trying to give in terms of what other partnership had we had over the years. So I'm responding to Honorable Mabasa's question, the first question relating to the partnerships.
Okay.
And then the other partnership that we have also was with the fruit produce markets, the one that committee would have visited, for example, with the Mangaung, Durban, and as well as the Springs one. The other question was who benefits at the end? The benefit is both for CIFA as well as for the underlying enterprises. CIFA benefit by making sure that it's in the midst of difficulties in the fiscals to get financial resources to do developmental funding. You are receiving funds. I must also add that the corporate as well benefits. So it's CIFA, it's corporate, it's also the enterprises themselves. CIFA receives scarce resources, which is the capital, to manage on behalf of companies. When the companies normally would have their enterprise development programs, where they want to also end by providing support to enterprises insofar as enterprise and supply development is concerned. But because, as I said, they don't have their own division that lends to small businesses, and CIFA as a lender, which has been a license from the National Credit Regulator, CIFA can then be able to utilize that pool of funds to lend to small businesses. So the corporate that has put its money into that fund is then able to earn a score in terms of their BBBE scorecard by virtue of its money being managed and lended to small businesses. CIFA benefits in terms of not having resources. You are still getting money which is not yours, but managing money for others. You are charging a management fee, but at the same time you are helping in terms of the development impact. The SMEs and co-ops, they benefit because they receive a funding to do their funding, to do their business activities. So that would be insofar as the benefit is concerned. With regard to the question around the what is the difference between the one at the Department of Labor and this one. So Department of Labor, I'm aware they've got a labor activation program, which is largely looking at and other programs from a training perspective. But this one support the SMMEs and co-ops from a lending point of view. So one would be I'm up for correction in terms of whether specifically which one is referring to at the honourable members referring to at the Department of Labour. But it's more I understand it's more on the training side or the non-financial side. While from a safer perspective, the fund would be used to provide credit lines or lending facility to enterprises. There was a question that was asked relating what is meant to be a facilitator, to have a facilitator status. We see this as the having given a status to be able to manage funds on behalf of other institutions who will benefit by getting the BBBE levels, at the same time assisting small businesses. So a status is bestowed on an institution after a variety of assessment that they have to do on the institution to check whether that institution has got the capabilities to be able to do the lending. So one element that determines that is to have the so-called status or a license from the DTI, whether is this institution can be able to drive that, because the corporates won't be able to benefit from that necessarily if they just put their money to institutions like CIFA for CIFA to utilize to lend without CIFA having been recognized as a facilitator status. The process has indeed taken too long. As I indicated, we did apply. I think for us, it's a chicken and egg situation. I know when the DG was outlining earlier that we should also explore the need to form a fund. But when we debated that, we felt that in order to because when you generate a fund, there are a lot of other processes that you need to follow. You need a concurrence, for example, from various concurrence from National Treasury, concurrence from your executive authority with the Department of Small Business Development, and register the fund with the Master of High Court, etc. So we just felt that without us going through all this process, without having a facilitator status, let us prioritize on rather instead getting the facilitator status, which unfortunately it has been taking so long. The question in terms of who have we been engaging as an institution? What we have decided to do while we are waiting for the facilitator status is to continue to engage with some of the institutes that I've mentioned earlier, more in terms of what other partnership can we be able to venture in. I mentioned, for example, the Coca-Cola. I mentioned the Transnet, amongst others, while we are waiting for the process of the facilitator status. So I must say, we have not really rigorously been engaging with the corporates per se. Although, I mean, there are a number of corporates that they say to us that I don't necessarily have to mention that they can be able to participate. They have funding for that. One example would be, if I have to mention it, the likes of ExxonMittal. But now it is more at a very informal stage in terms of, because we don't want to go deeper to that, because they will ask questions, are you a BBBE facilitator? And they will say that we are not, and they will not, those discussion has not reached that level. So as for us, as soon as we really receive this status, the modalities in terms of nature of donors, the typical clients, what will happen if the client default, etc. Once we then build the fund, once the fund is put into place, would then have to say, what is the role of this fund? What is the fund going to be doing? What are the characteristics of clients that we need, etc.? Because some of them will say, if you are receiving funding from a corporate, for example, that is participating maybe in the state, in the area of steel, etc., they will say, support SME in that area. So we have not really developed the modalities around that. And again, maybe this to answer the question, what happens if the SMEs do not pay? So those are the modalities that we'll develop once we finalize the receive the associated status. DG, maybe the question from Honorable Kruger about the transversal and others, I think, might be in your space.
Chair, maybe through you, to say to the CEO that you've not addressed the question, almost the conflict between ESD funding, ED funding is typically grant funding, and CIFA does loan funding. Is there a model that you have begun to conceptualize, so that we've begun to conceptualize that in terms of the work you're doing for us? Because surely the one doesn't have to wait for the other. By the time we engage with corporates, we must be able to put a model forward and say, this is how we think it will work. How will we manage that? Because, I mean, it's taken us 2 years or more to get the BEE status. And then if you're only going to develop the model then, how long will it take? I think that question needs to be answered. And I think the challenge, as I understand it, from the DG of DTI is exactly the point which Honorable Kruger made. If the corporates invest in this fund, they would expect BEE accreditation. And that is where what the risk is for the DTI. Who are the custodians of this act? Because how do you defend the integrity of the BEE Act and what the Act, it's almost as if DTI in being the custodian of the BEE legislation then shares that mandate with organizations that has the facilitator status. He also mentioned a number of other DFIs that have applied besides the one that I've mentioned and other structures, and that they really have to apply their mind to it. And I pointed out what some of the risks are and that they've already identified in the process. So I anticipate what will happen is that if such a status is awarded, it's not a one-size-fits-all. There'll be certain conditions, and it will be for a particular time period. And I think what this discussion says to me, Chair, that it clearly has been our thought processes has been limited. It's as if we wait for the one thing to be finished and then begin to start the other, without really grappling with, is this the right option or the answer that we're waiting for? So I more work needs to be done, and I undertake that we will engage with the CEO and so that we can take this matter forward and not be technicist about it. On the other question that was directed at the department, that there are funds for development spread across government, it is true, and we have reported on that before. I don't know what the amount is currently, but I think in the previous financial year, there was an amount of $15.5 billion reported that is available over the MTEF for direct funding to SMEs. And there might be a lot more
than that. And the reference to the agriculture, it is true that they do not as such have an agreement with the Department of Culture, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I mean just for information, at the time when this department was established, I was the DG of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and therefore one could immediately see what the possibilities are, that what is seen in that environment as just smallholder farmers that get support, and I mean there's huge money, I think it's about $3.5 billion, which took back on its own through the provincial departments, allocates to smallholder farmers. But in that context, the smallholder farmers are seldom viewed as potential business enterprises. And so, just for a number of reasons, it was difficult it took a while for the department to, because I think those negotiations often start at the DG to DG level, and it was difficult. The department took about a year before they appointed somebody, and then it was difficult to move that relationship forward with the incumbent that was there for less than a year, and now that discussion is on the table again. In fact, it is the Department of Rural Development, the acting DGs for Rural Development, Darth and myself, have in fact agreed not only on an agreement to have an appointment agreement with Rural Development, but on a specific locality. That there is not an in-principle thing that we're going to work and even identify the place where we will demonstrate how our mandates will work together. Other things that we do to provide guidance to departments, other departments, the rest of government, on how to spend their money on the creation and the growth of SMMEs. We have reported before that probably some, it must be about 2 years now, that we have this national interdepartmental coordinating meeting. And I must say, Chair, I mean, the departments who we target in particular are all of the departments in the economic cluster, but we also have other departments from the social, clusters called, like social development, like human settlements, etc., who we invite. And we've been very fortunate because we have something like 80% attendance of the people, the departments who are invited. And so we have started by that, because it's again about building relationships. We don't have the power to go to a department and say, we want that money and the money must come from us, because somehow the development mandate is cross-cutting, or the support for it's cross-cutting across all departments. But we have to guide. And so one of the things that we do at each of those quarterly meetings is to invite a few departments to come and share their models and to come and share our models and best practices. And I know that there are departments who are doing extremely well, we've had public works, we've had human settlements, etc. So that's the one unit of work. So you almost expose the work that they are doing, you surface it, and then we gained, I've mentioned my last point, Chair, we've mentioned before, that we've revised the definitions of the Small Business Act. And that act will take a while, the amendment bill will take a while before it reaches here. But what we have established that we can do is to publish the definitions into regulations, which then makes it, which is popularized. And so we have a project plan whereby we will, before the 31st of March, which I'm mindful of, it's only 32 days, working days away. We have written to all of the departments because we have consulted them. For example, I think agriculture, the transport, there's about 11 sectors that are mentioned in the Act. And say, we've dealt with this. Are you in concurrence with this, and will you support it if we take it to cluster as regulations? So those would be a very formal way of providing guidance. Because what we have found, if we just issue guidelines, like the red step guidelines, it doesn't become compulsory. But if you convert those kinds of things to regulations, it's a different matter. Thank you, Jeff. Sorry for taking so much time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, BG, for the explanation. But, Madam Chair, there's a thing called best practices. And our department is supposed to know what is the best practices. So the question always come up to me where if you're in the business of farming, what do you know about best practices when it comes to financing small business? Or when you're in the business of rural development, what do you know what is the best practices about financing small business development? And so we can carry on. So we need to revisit this whole process of, you know, agreements, because as I said in the beginning, I was under the impression that all departments had agreements with small business department and it works together. And so the very first department I asked about the agreement, they say no. So, you know, it seems like that strategy is not working. So we need to look at the strategy where we can serve the people that need this money the most, and that is our small businesses, and especially in the rural areas. You know, that tunny with a box of apples, like my colleague in front of me always say. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what the DG was saying about the fund, and I completely agree with her. Thank you for doing our job for us, DG. That it's absolutely absurd to think that this has been in the on the drawing board for 2 years where they haven't even worked out their business model for the fund. I just find that inexplicable. I think that we need to get an explanation for why that is so. Because when you go to the corporates, as the DG says, and whoever else is going to lend you the money or give you the money, they need to understand what's going to happen to it.
Now I have three questions to ask. While I appreciate the presentation made here, I don't think that we got what we wanted to get. On the fourth quarter of 2015-2016 financial year, the Enterprise Development Fund was supposed to be reported as something that has been established. The report that came to us on the fourth quarter of 2015-2016 reflected that milestone had not been achieved. We are in 2018 now. The question that I want to ask is,
how much time did you budget, CEO, to have the Enterprise Development Fund established? Did you budget that you were going to achieve this in 1 year, in 6 months, or in 18 months, or in 24 months? And what were the milestones that you put along the way? Think of a person that is running marathon from Devon to Pietermaritzburg. That person knows good air. I will pass Hillcrest and there is a mountain, and if I achieve that point, it means I will get in Pietermaritzburg at such and such a time. You put the milestones along the way. I don't want to use the Gantt chart now because I've been using that for a very long time. It doesn't get into anybody's head. I want to use a very, very simple project management explanation. I'm asking this question because if you knew all the milestones, meaning that you had good planning before you started to do, you would have known the requirement for getting a triple BEE facilitator status and how much time was required for you to do that. Any work for me that is not having a good plan cannot be easily achieved because you don't know what you have to do by when and who has to do that. Now, I want an honest answer here. Because each time the department presents something to us, or CIFA and CIDA present something to us, what I get from what you are presenting to us is that you don't sit down to plan and have a project management plan. Project management in these three entities doesn't exist. As a result, you don't achieve what you are supposed to achieve at a particular time. Again, I want to use the marathon. If no one tells when is the cutoff time for reaching Pietermaritzburg, if you want to win, to get a medal, you can run for 40 days and still say you reached Pietermaritzburg from Devon because there were no time frame. But if you know that there is a time frame, you will then practice according to that time frame that I will pace myself in this way. I will pass Hillcrest, I will pass Botas Hill, I will pass Mkondeni, I will pass Market Road and reach winning point in Pietermaritzburg at such and such time. Abantu bemarathon babekishi mabheki washa. I don't get that sense now, Guinness. I want to know, okay, what time were you giving to yourself to achieve this, and what made you not to achieve that time? What were the milestones? And then tell us now that you have not achieved that in the planned time, when are you going to achieve it? So that we can then time ourselves as to when we call you back for you to report the progress.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will definitely give you the honest response. In hindsight, we didn't plan it appropriately. We just thought by getting a B status open, I think we put more effort on getting a facilitator status so that we can work from there on. So, and then to 2015, 2016, 2016, 2017, we thought that was going to be an easy process. So we really did not appropriately plan it. I just have to be honest, because we wanted the status first. If we don't get the status, for example, we would not have gone ahead. So we prioritize on other activities.
I don't want to waste any more time on this matter. DG, can you please pay attention? Till I hear we are not playing. We know that by 2030, 9.9 million new jobs should have come from small business. We work backward from that. And key to that is the establishment of this fund. So it can't be an open-ended target. It can't be, because when you plan all the things that you need to achieve, what is guiding you is 2039.9 million new jobs from small businesses, which includes SMEs and cooperatives. And if one of the hindering factors for small businesses to provide those jobs is lack of access to finance, and the intervention to that is the establishment of development, of enterprise development fund, then you must have a time frame as to when the enterprise development fund should be established. Because you are looking at 2030, 9.9 million new jobs from small businesses. So it can't be. All I am saying is that tell us now how much time you are going to take to achieve this, so that we can know that by such and such a time, small businesses and cooperatives will have access to funding, because the Enterprise Development Fund shall have been established by that time.
If you allow me, if I can intervene and say, I think you've concluded directly that there wasn't a plan, the CEO's admitted to that, or with the milestones. So I think there hasn't been a thought process in that direction. So and it's not acceptable. I agree with you. So I don't know whether the CEO would be in a position to say, we'll do it by that time, because they have to think about it and say,
you can't think today because you are in front. It can't come into the mind that you had to plan that, because the portfolio committee is asking that. That is what you are paid to do. You are paid to plan your work. In the same way that Parliament plans its work. Parliament knows that if we don't have the budget speech delivered by the 21st, it means the entire government will collapse, because there will be no funds transferred. So Parliament works to achieve that date. And Parliament knows that without SONA you can't have the budget. So Parliament does everything in its power to have SONA and to have the budget, so that money can be transferred. You can't then say that you didn't think about that. It can't be correct. Can we know what are the reasons for not thinking about that? Why people can't think about that? That you need to put milestones. You need to put time frame.
I think the difficulty is to put time frame as to when the fund begins, until you know for sure when we're going to get the facilitator status. So I think that's the difficulty that one is facing, because for the fund to commence, you need to have that facilitator status. And all is outside the control of us as a CIFA. So as soon as what I can say we'll do, Honorable Chairperson, is to utilize all the means to get the DTI to give us an indication as to when we're going to get the facilitator status. So without that, I cannot say that maybe by in a month's time the fund will be in place, etc., because I wouldn't know by when we're going to get that. But what we have done, while we are waiting for that, and I just want to mention something that will comfort you.
Is DTI in opposition to SNME and CIFA? Don't you fall under the same cluster? I just want to understand, what would make it difficult for DTI to expedite something that is needed by CIFA and the Department of Small Business for those two to facilitate the situation that South Africa has got 9.9 new jobs provided by small business? Why would it not be in the interest of DTI? In my view, it will not be in the interest of DTI if it is not communicated to DTI in the manner that DTI will understand the agency of issuing that BEE facilitator status. If it is done as a by-the-way thing, DTI won't find it necessary for them to prioritize that. So, can you tell us as to why DTI would drag the feet, knowing very well the importance of issuing that BEE facilitator status to CIFA? Why would they drag their feet?
I will re-engage myself again with the DTI, with the level of the DG of DTI, and just to see whether the information that we have presented, because you either get the status or you don't get if you don't qualify. So I will re-engage, but I will be let give me maybe a forward.
You see, if from the beginning there was emphasis and there was a plan that said by such and such a time we shall have achieved this, and if DTI doesn't give us this certificate by this time, we will escalate this issue to the people higher than the DG or the DTI. Then we would have achieved this. But if you talk as if you are friends, you are not talking about what is needed by the country, then you will get the kind of response that you are getting. So, are you asking for 4 weeks?
I just want to give maybe the members some comfort that while we were waiting for that process, on my slide number 2, second last bullet payment, we have been trying to look for other means to get the funds to support SMMEs and co-ops. You will recall that the EU has given us
okay. The key thing is this BEE facilitator status. If that is the key thing for you to be able to get all these funds so that SMMEs and cooperatives can have access to funds, you must spend 36 hours a day to try and get that. So it's no excuse. All other things come after that. The key thing that we need, Tina, is that we are giving you, we are granting you the 4 weeks. We will call you back in 4 weeks' time. Thank you. Can we get the next presentation? We welcome the minister. We go to apology. We are fighting with your department and Sifa minister. Minister, we are fighting with your department and Sifa because, again, they come to us to present something that indicates to us that they did not sit down to plan to have a Gantt chart, have milestones, and come to us to say to us, we had planned to achieve this by such and such a time, and these are the things that we had to do, and this is what we have achieved, this is not what we have been able to achieve, these are the reasons for not achieving this, this is the intervention that we are asking for from the portfolio committee, they are not telling us that. So, the Enterprise Development Fund is not yet established, and we are giving them 4 weeks to finalize that process with DTI. And we don't believe that DTI would not have granted them that status. If there was clear communication and reasons for wanting that status was communicated very well to DTI, because DTI is part of the economic transformation cluster in government. They can't work against this department and CIFA. Can we get the next presentation?
Chairperson and honourable members, thank you very much. We have the tracking document in front of us. We will, and we trust that we have interpreted the expectations correctly, and that this resolution, I think it's 55, follows, I think, our presentation on the program review and how we will reprioritize and reconfigure what we are doing, and in the process make our the business models between ourselves and that of the entities more cost-effective and streamlined processes. So I've my colleague Mzol Marking, who's known to the department, led that unit of work. Since we made that commitment to the department, we have also reported to the committee that we established ourselves as what is called the Small Business Development Portfolio. So between CEDA, CIFA, and ourselves, we share a shared collective vision for this portfolio. It's linked to what you've just said earlier, our mandate and those 9.9 million jobs grown by SMMEs and cooperatives. And our roles are very clearly defined in that. And the part of the work, we've done lots of work in this area, and part of the work we've done in the last little while was to divine what we call a portfolio architecture. What we will do to redesign, transfer, make that service offering a lot smoother. And the sum total is where we are now. I think a lot of the technical work is finalized. But you will appreciate that ultimately when we implement it, because we're talking about what we're going to do with functions, and functions that have to go to the entities or come to the entities from us to us, and it impacts on people. And so while we have to taken the bargaining council, labor, along with us in the process, there's a presentation of our final migration document and this architecture that Joel's going to talk to the DBC, and I think that meeting is, it actually took place yesterday, and we've not had a chance to get feedback from that. We can only put detail in the public domain once those things are concluded. But I think what members will, at the end, is just to be able to speak to you about the progress that we've made and where we are. I'll give over to a chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Good afternoon, members and colleagues. Okay. All right, thank you very much, DG, for those opening remarks. So let me cut to the chase. So when we established the portfolio architecture, we had these objectives in mind. We thought that it would foster an alignment between small business policy and just broader government economic policy, and we looked at policies like the NDP, IPEP, and MTSF. Secondly, we thought that it would be a good platform for integrated planning between DSPD, CIFA, and CIDA, our respective agencies. And we thought that it would help us to develop and implement an integrated platform for program design, implementation, as well as M&E. Of course, this will cut out the issues of duplication between us and our agencies. Importantly as well, we thought that this would assist us to build strategic partnerships with the private sector and other SMME stakeholders. So having considered the objectives of the portfolio architecture, we also then paid particular attention to the design of the architecture. And so we thought that this portfolio would then be premised on the following. It would cover issues related to the integration of financial and non-financial support services throughout the spheres of government. And secondly, it would help with the facilitation of business support services through local business support service centers, entrepreneurial support centers, in a nutshell what we would call a one-stop service for entrepreneurs. Thirdly, we thought that this design would support services be facilitated across the business development phase and also focused on specific sectors. The fourth element that we promised the portfolio architecture is the crowding in of the private sector resources and skills. The fifth element being a national monitoring and evaluation system, which would help us with the following. It would assist with building accountability. Secondly, measuring effectiveness and efficiency. And thirdly, communicating and reporting to stakeholders, which is very important. We feel very strongly that this structure, based on the objectives as well as the design, will allow us at a broader level
to compare ourselves, the services that we provide globally, with other countries who are providing proper support to SME development and the models that they implement. So one of the decisions that we took consciously was that for us to provide a comprehensive support package to SMEs and cooperatives is that we should consider a support model that will be based on the different stages of the business life cycle. So we thought that we'd be saving a lot of money and effort if we tailor-make our products and services to these business life stages. So we looked at what we can do to support entrepreneurs, small businesses in the pre-startup phase. So we thought that if we paid particular attention to the generation of ideas as part of the financial support that we provide, we thought that we could work with companies, we could sign accords with companies to partake in this. Maybe we can rope in CEOs or senior managers from the private sector and oil and sundry to be part of the panel of people who will help us to identify these good ideas. We thought that we could also set aside money for the development of each business idea. We're toying around with 500,000 per business idea. And in terms of non-financial support for this segment of business life cycle, we thought that we could partner with the universities to train students in entrepreneurship. Students could present these ideas to the department, and viable ideas could be funded through DFIs. And we thought that one of the policies or legislative issues that we would need to consider would be a policy on innovation or working with the innovation hub to see how we can assist entrepreneurs and businesses in this phase of business development. And secondly, we thought that it would be important for us to encourage entrepreneurship graduates to start their own business. This we could partner with tertiary institutions, and we could ring fence funds for this initiative. And the type of non-financial support that we would attach to this support package would be the running of entrepreneurship in schools with a view to get learners to be interested in starting their own business, their own businesses, and also this would happen at the tertiary institutions. You will be happy to know that CIDA is currently doing part of this work, entrepreneurship in schools, and we've had discussions ourselves as the department with tertiary institutions to see how we could get entrepreneurship training being included in the curriculums at the different tertiary institutions. So as we said, that we don't want to do this alone, we want to partner with the private sector. So we feel that private sector could be roped in to fund some of these ideas through their CSI funds. So these funds could be dedicated to elements such as market research, feasibility studies, so that these ideas are tested and proper scientific information is gathered. And the non-financial support that we align to this is a serious program on mass entrepreneurship being executed through partnerships with FET colleges. And one of the important issues that we identified is that we want people to specialize and focus on niche opportunities and not be all over the place so that their chances of success are improved. And then on the next phase of business development, we looked at startups. And one of the issues that we've identified as a department is that we are lacking in terms of providing comprehensive support to businesses in the startup phase of development. So we want to have a startup funding package that would have something between 50,000 and maybe 5 million. And we want to introduce a combination of working capital and equity finance. And the type of non-financial support that we have conceived is that we need to work with CEDA, obviously, will lead in this regard, the development of good business plans, market research formulation, and startup mentoring, coaching, and counseling, because this is very important for people in this phase of business development. And the policy and legislative instruments that we thought that we could utilize to this end would be streamlining registration systems so that it can be delivered at local level through one-stop access points, an online registration system that will enable an enterprise to be registered with the CIPC, Department of Labor, SARS, and municipalities. And looking at the high rate of mortality with small businesses, we thought that for you to qualify for this type of support, one of the prerequisites will be that you must have participated in the non-financial support program that is related to business planning, so that by the time we give you money, we are confident and comfortable that you at least have been taught and mentored on business management and planning. And we thought that the businesses that will be considered for this will have to be enterprises between the ages of 0 and 3. And on the right there, we look at the non-financial support that we could consider, the different modules, one focusing on introduction to entrepreneurship, business planning, marketing and sales, which are very important for the success of a business. So if we move to the next phase of business life cycle, which would be the growth one, it's on slide 13. So here we thought that the portfolio will focus on entrepreneurs and small businesses between the ages of 3 and 5. And the non-financial support that we're considering here is a supplier trade credit, which could be issued via CIFA. And the non-financial support here would be sector-specific mentoring support. And we know that some businesses need to be accredited, so we look at quality and ISO accredited programs to support the competitiveness of these businesses so that they can be sustainable over time. And the next element that we looked at is a bank guarantee program with commercial banks for working capital, especially for enterprises that participate in government procurement. The fourth one is invoice discounting to support the cash flow in enterprises. So the non-financial support that we're looking at here is the establishment of a sector-specific trade warehouse or warehouses to facilitate market access, especially for secondary cooperatives. We also want to step up innovation and increase sales and marketing efforts of these companies. Then the next phase of business development are enterprises in the mature stage of development. And the type of financial support that we're considering here is venture capital. This will also consider new opportunities and business ventures. We'll also look at funding for expansion finance as well as export financing. So the financial support that we're looking at are programs that support quality and management, that support quality management and standards, conduct macro market analysis, as well as the formulation of a strategy for further growth, because we don't want this guy to be stagnant. We also want to look at export readiness programs and assessments, small business trade missions, as well as trade information. So one of the difficult issues that we have encountered in our space is that there are a lot of businesses, small, who are in the decline phase of their life cycle. And we thought that as part of our commitment to the development of small businesses in the country, we would consider here providing a refinancing method through a business rescue. And so this refinance mechanism would have to find itself or meaning through a business rescue turnaround and retention strategy or measures. So as CIFA's presentation will show, we are in the process of developing a business rescue turnaround and retention strategy so that we can help businesses in decline. So having considered the above, we thought that these measures would be appropriate for SMMEs, and we felt that while it is possible to make an argument for integrating cooperatives into the same value chain as SMMEs, what has become crystal clear to us is that a new approach to cooperatives is indeed required. So to this end, we favor the creation of a standalone structure for cooperatives in order to achieve this. We believe strongly that this function will take ownership for cooperatives at a strategy level and would draw on subject matter expertise from policy, legislation, program design, M&E functions within the department. As the honorable members will know, we are discharged with the responsibility to establish the Cooperatives Development Agency. And one of the views that we hold is that while we are still in that process and trying to find the resources necessary, we could establish this and integrate it within CEDA. The view is that this will enable a focused effort in the department and remove the distractions from other areas of the business, and also capacitate our cooperative units to improve their delivery against the mandate. So we need to have a model that we could possibly implement so that we achieve the above. So the model is depicted in the following slide, slide 19, and it's an integrated strategic approach that involves ensuring that adequate and relevant support programs, products, and institutional mechanisms exist so that we may provide support across the entire cooperative life cycle, from pre-formulation, startup, business survival, growth and expansion, agglomeration, and turnaround of ailing cooperatives. So we also considered that we need to have sector-specific programs linked to government industrial and economic policies such as in agriculture, clothing and textiles, and automotive. And the financial instruments that we consider for this are sector-specific financing instruments, either through CIFA or sector-specific retail financial intermediaries. And the non-financial support that we have looked at are sector-specific non-financial support services through sector-specific incubators, both physical and virtual. We feel that these will coordinate programs nationally with specific sector outcomes and will be linked to government policies such as procurement, local content, BBBE codes, licensing, and other government supply incentives. And if we jump to slide 24, honourable members, here we look at the FBG portfolio architecture based on the current ecosystem for small businesses and cooperatives. So as we said at the beginning, we realize that the mandate is huge and that we cannot achieve it alone, and therefore we need to partner with the relevant stakeholders who partake in SME development. And for pre-startup phase, we list some of the stakeholders that we will bring on board so that we travel this journey together. And so we do that for all the different phases of the business life cycle. And on the far right column, we emphasize the role of our portfolio in this ecosystem. And we say that the department will, of course, have to play a leading role in the formulation and development of legislation, policy and research, strategy development, M&E instruments, program design for the agencies, as well as program implementation. And on the column products and services, you will see that some of the products and services that we feel are necessary for us to help SMEs and cooperatives so that they may play a meaningful role in the South African economy are the following: incentives, loans, mentorship, technical support, training, business development skills. So we feel that if we provide as a portfolio working with our stakeholders, we will be able to help SMEs so that they are competitive and sustainable. If we move to slide 26 on the proposed way forward, so we thought about how many SMEs and cooperatives should ideally be active so that the ideas that we want to achieve may be realized. And we thought that a considerable number of SMEs will need to be fully functional. And we looked at the report that came from Goldman Sachs that has a recommendation that perhaps about 300,000 small enterprises we need to be fully functional to contribute to inclusive growth. And this will help us so that we may be able to plan accurately about the quality and quantity of products and services that we as a portfolio would have to put together so that we can reach all of these enterprises that we feel should be fully functional for us and or for them to make a meaningful contribution. And therefore, we will ensure that we provide a wide-ranging support to these SMEs in their respective sectors, in their different business growth cycles. And one of the categories that we looked at are export-ready enterprises that we felt strongly that should be included on the list of enterprises for which a concerted effort should be made to provide tailor-made support. And we thought that we would also need to consider prioritizing industries where we can get the type of impact that we desire. And so we prioritized and we looked at industries on slide 29, or honorable members, that includes, amongst others, trade, business services, construction, transport, storage and communication, as well as personal services. And we consider that perhaps these should be clustered as follows: trade and business services, construction, transport and storage, creative industries and communications,
and the National Industrial Policy Framework and Industrial Policy Action Plan integration projects. And we found solace in that these are the sectors that were affirmed by the Bureau of Economic Research last year as the main sectors where small enterprises operate, and we feel that if we then tailor make our support to these industries, we'll be able to make the impact that we so want. So if we move to slide 32, having made the admission that we cannot do this alone, we have identified key role players such as development finance institutions, which we feel that they must assume the role of supporting small enterprises with financial and non-financial support, that we as a portfolio, being ourselves, CIDA and CIFA, are unable to provide. Amongst others, we are thinking of NEF, the IDC, Innovation Fund, Innovation Hub, and CETAS. Thank you, Minister. So having looked at this and done a review of some of our programs, we then thought that, of course, there needs to be some movement of programs from the department to the agencies and vice versa. So if I may highlight some of the programs that we have considered for such, the micro-franchising program that we have been piloting as a department, which has a budget of $6 million, we thought that we have done the pilot and have received some information that would help us to develop a much better product for helping enterprises that want to go the franchising route. And we've also looked at NEVAS and its two instruments, being SAFE, the Shared Economic Infrastructure Facility, as well as the Informal and Micro Enterprise Development Program. NEVAS has a budget, as honorable members might recall, of $99 million. SAFE focused on partnering with strategic partners such as the municipalities so that we develop business infrastructure for enterprises to share in rural townships and other peri-urban areas. For IMEDP, here we assist informal traders, micro traders, with business infrastructure of whatever kind that they need in order for their businesses to succeed. So we are considering transferring some components of these programs to CIDA and CIFA to implement. BBSDP, which has a budget of $254 million, we're looking at transferring some of its components to CIFA and CIDA. As you know, BBSDP provides both financial and non-financial support, so the respective components of the program will be moved to the agencies according to their competences. The Startup Enterprise Development Program, we are looking at restructuring and transferring to CIFA and CIDA. Currently, this program provides support to startup enterprises for an amount ranging from $50,000 to $200,000. The Enterprise Incubation Program, we also going to transfer it to CIDA. In fact, some components of it have already been transferred to CIDA, so they've already started implementing. Well, they will start implementing, I think, in the next financial year. They've started implementing now IMEDP, the one focusing on informal and micro enterprises, we transferred it. So our idea is that the department, when the strategic approach of formulating an SBD portfolio architecture was that we will focus as a national department on the formulation of legislation, policy, strategy, M&E, and we'll leave the program design and implementation to agencies. And we feel that if we implement that idea of a portfolio approach, it will then leave the department to focus on the more strategic issues so that we may lead in the formulation of policy and legislation geared towards the development of small businesses and cooperatives in the country, and agencies will focus on implementation. We will then do M&E so that we have the possibility to evaluate what works and what doesn't work so that we can be in a position to ameliorate the programs that we provide to SMMEs and cooperatives. I will leave it there, Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you for your attention.
I open the opportunity for members to ask questions and make comments. Honorable Mame, followed by Honorable Chan, Honorable Kruger, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the colleagues. It's a comment actually on slide number 7 on pre-startups. Well, firstly, I'm impressed that we'll be partnering with the tertiary institutions and the education department. But also, one would suggest that you don't leave behind the National Youth Development Agency, because those are the people who are leading the same constituency you want to help. On their database, they have even the number of the unemployed graduates, because those are the people I think must be the priority in your program. You know, Chair, the youth have the slogan that you do not do anything for us without us. It is in that premise that I suggest that also you contact the NIDA, because they also have similar programs, and they have funds for that, maybe in order to consolidate that those resources. You also partner with them. But otherwise, that was my comment, Chairperson. I'm excited about the vision that I see here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ms. Orr, for the presentation. My first comment is that there's a lot in this which takes from the overall recommendations of the Sizwi and Gobodo report, Sizwi and Saluba Gobodo report, which was presented to the department in October 2015, and it's now February 2018. Okay, so we've had virtually 2.5 years of treading water, if I may call it that. I mean, that's a kind way of putting it. Between the recommendations on the programs and the strategy that the department and its agencies should follow, and what we've just been presented. So my first comment is, why on earth does it take so long for the penny to drop, and for that to translate into a new portfolio architecture? You know, it's boggling my mind, really. that this time has been taken to come up with a program strategy, or at least an architecture, which has some merit, I may say, although I do have certain comments to make. But that's the first point, and I'm glad you're here, Minister, to hear this point. You were out when I made the initial point, which was the fact that the proposals in this architecture bear a very striking resemblance to the recommendations of the Sizwe Ngobodo, Nsoluba Ngobodo recommendations given to the department way back in October 2015. So why has it taken nearly 2.5 years for them to be gestated and now born again in this new architecture? That's the first question. The second question I have relates to the almost complete absence of recognition of what is happening in the private sector in these five phases of pre-startup through to mature, through to decline. And you make the comment yourself, Zor, that the department can't do it on its own. You know, and if the 300,000 enterprises that Goldman Sachs identifies, you know, are going to be created, it's not going to happen through the efforts of the state. It's going to happen through the efforts of the state, but more particularly the entrepreneurs and the private sector players out there that are wanting the type of support services that you're referring to. So, whilst I applaud the proposal that the department focuses more on the strategy and the monitoring and evaluation and so on, you're still talking about dishing out large chunks of money through your agencies and through other functions. And who's to say that those agencies and functions are the best and the most efficient means by which that money is spent? I mean, if you look at the, and I've asked this question before in previous meetings, if you look at the South African entrepreneurial ecosystem that was developed by Aspen, the Aspen Network of Development Entrepreneurs, you'll see that there are hundreds of organizations out there that are operating in this ecosystem, all providing a very wide range of specialist services. And I don't buy the argument that was made, I think, by the DG last year that your ecosystem is supply side and theirs is demand side. That's not true. That's rubbish. That actually doesn't characterize the true nature of the ecosystem. It's not a matter of supply and demand. The entrepreneurial ecosystem described in that report should be absolutely crucial to your thinking in terms of the organizations that you should be partnering with and channeling support to. And I come back to the report that was done by Catalyst for Growth on the effectiveness of business development support services. Has that report been taken into account? The proposal to converge non-financial and financial support services at the local level, at the point of delivery, makes sense, and this committee has been calling for that for years. Effectively, it's the merger of what CIFRA and CEDA does. So I'd like to know, practically speaking, how that's going to happen, because if it's not going to happen at the sort of top end of your organizational structure, how is it going to filter through to the delivery at the local level? A couple of good points. I think that your ideas for trade credit finance, supply chain, through to credit guarantees, I think they're good. I think that a lot more help needs to be provided through the private sector, because the private sector's supply chains are where many of the blockages happen, particularly in terms of late payments and cash flow problems. Just in terms of the mature stage, I don't think this has been properly thought through, in the sense that your earliest reference to angel and VC funding comes at the mature stage. Angel and VC funding is not required at the mature phase. It's required at the startup and the early growth phase. At the mature phase, you can normally go and get funding from other institutions. So this needs a rethink. I'm very thin on co-ops, I have to say. I think that your proposal doesn't really get to grips with the nub of the problem, which is the high failure rate of co-ops and the fact that what we have here is money chasing businesses rather than businesses chasing money. You know, you have a target to meet in terms of the number of co-ops that need to be established, which has led to a whole lot of co-ops being formed, and they die when the oxygen of the grant is removed. And I think, again, there needs to be a far greater emphasis on the formation of secondary co-ops, because these are the organizations that actually have the scale and the capacity to provide the services that the smaller primary co-ops need. I support the export-orientated plan. That is excellent, and I think it needs a great deal more emphasis. The question that I have here is, there's no reference to the relationship with the CEO's fund. The CEO's fund, as you recall, was established at the end of last year, 1.5 billion rand, committed by the private sector. Surely this will be an opportunity for the department to partner, as it has promised to do, with this fund. And that's important to stress, but there's also no reference in this proposal to the proposal to set up a venture capital fund, which the government has made mention of on a number of occasions, and which we in the DA proposed way back in our 2014 election manifesto, but there's no sign of it here. Where's that going? Then tourism. Are you including tourism in your categorization of business services or trade and accommodation? Where does tourism fit in? It must fit in somewhere, because tourism is a major employer, and particularly for people of relatively low skills, which is what the unemployed mainly consist of in this country. And then finally, why have you decided to discontinue FinFind? The DGI and the USAID invested tens of millions of rands in this project. I'd like to know why that has resulted in the closure of this program, or has it just been handed over to someone else? Thank you, Chair.
Madam Kruger.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. And Chair, it's a while now that this committee meetings was actually boring, but I feel very excited after this presentation, and I think we're moving in the right direction. My worry is just, and I'm sure this is on a planning phase, I don't know if the department cost this whole new, this whole new plan. Because, you know, planning is one thing, but paying for the plan and executing the plan is another thing. So, and we're also in the season of our APPs. So I don't know if what is the way forward. Are we going to agree on this new way forward and then design the APPs afterwards, and then, of course, the costing of the plans, or what is the way for, how exactly are we going to implement, if everybody is agreeing on this, how are we going to implement this? That's the first question. And the second question, there's also a question about the committee's own strategic plan. Did the department look at our strategic plan? And they take some cues from our strategic plan and build it into this new direction. Thank you, Chief.
We give the department an opportunity to respond.
Um,
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the department will respond to most of the technical issues that are being raised. From ourselves, we just want to make that statement that in response in particular to I nearly said Comrade Chance. Yeah, I guess my head is full of comrades right now. If we recall going right back when we started, when we had our first acting DG, part of the presentations that, among the first presentations that we made, was that this is a new department, and therefore we were requesting that part of the strategies and plans that we're presenting, we're saying it's going to take us a while to really ultimately come to something that we all feel comfortable with. And I think it's, Mr. Chan says, why did it take this long for the penny to drop? We are a new department, even though in the bigger scheme of things, I don't regard us ourselves as a new department anymore, because we have been able to put our systems in place and win ourselves out of the Department of Trade and Industry and fight the battles both internally and externally to make sure that we create systems that will respond to the felt needs of small and medium enterprises and cooperatives. And therefore, I must say that it's a pity, obviously, that it has taken us this long to get to where we are, but we really needed to make sure that as we develop this portfolio, remember that even the introduction of the web portfolio, it took us quite a while because there were pushes and pushing forward and pushing back. And I think it's a pity, obviously, that it's taking us this long, but we needed to go through what we've got through so that we can finally present something that we, first and foremost, as a department, are very comfortable with. Secondly, in the process of ensuring that we develop this portfolio, we were not working in isolation. And I'm sure that we're not working in isolation because, as a department, we're also informed by other government processes. That includes the monitoring and evaluation, which we are answerable to from time to time as we develop our strategies and annual plans and so forth. But also, in answering the question to Honorable Chance, also to say, it's not Honorable Chance that spoke, did we take into consideration what the study group has been saying to us? We've said this from the very beginning, that we don't think we would be able to develop anything as solid as this, which I do still think needs a lot of working. We would not do that without taking into consideration sometimes the pain that we have had to go through in our presentations to the Portfolio Committee, in traveling out with the Portfolio Committee. Yes, we have taken that into consideration, very much so, because the reports that are done by the Portfolio Committee are very important to us, and I know that right now I'm dealing with the report of the visit to the Free State, and I'm looking at the recommendations and all that. For me and the Deputy Minister, all those documents and the ideas that are coming through are important for us in order for us to finally, at the end of this term, because the end of this term is around the corner, we would like to leave something that says, at the end of this term and the new term coming in, whoever comes in there must find something solid which will not make them go through exactly the same thing that we have gone through. And I think that what we are presenting here is not three years, to be honest, because the first year and the second year, we really were trying to find ourselves until we came to a point that says, let's look at all the things that are being said and let us begin to develop something solid. So this plan that we have here, if I'm not wrong, we can say in the past year and a half, we've been working on it. We didn't work on this as a proposal from the very beginning that we started. So what we are presenting here is something that we said when we started. A few years down the line, we really would like to present something solid, and the questions that are being raised here, in my view, are some of the things that we need to really continue working on. But to have a solid architecture, for me, was the first thing. Believe me, when the department, the DG, for instance, kept on coming back and forth about this, I wasn't convinced many a times. But as we were working, I finally, the penny began to drop. The penny began to drop, if I can use that. We finally came to a conclusion, as I finally came to the conclusion as a minister that I think this is solid enough, but somewhere along the line, certain things are going to be. We're still having arguments, by the way, about what needs to go to CIFA, what needs to go to CEDA. This is a proposal that we're putting here, and we have argued around this. I mean, I remember one time, even with the DG, I was saying to the DGO, why does it look like we're going to end up taking everything that side and we'll remain with nothing? But ultimately, if we say CEDA and CIFA is something that is under the Department of Small and Medium Enterprises, and we are part and parcel of the planning and everything of it, I shouldn't have the feeling that it's something in isolation out there. If we do the monitoring and evaluation properly, if we do, even including our participation during the strategies and so forth, I don't think this is going to be a difficulty. Finally, I will give to the department to also comment. 4 years being in this and running around, I also said I don't want to be running around like a blue-assed fly, trying to catch this and trying to catch that. I need to have the comfort that the institution that is there is an institution that I will be able, together with the DM, be able to guide politically, but get the technical, get the implementation side of things being done by the institution itself, so that ultimately I also do the oversight myself rather than really being the one that runs around all the time. Can you just take the other questions, please?
Thank you very much, Minister, for the assistance. And thank you, honorable members, for the questions as well as the positive remarks towards the proposal that the department is putting forward. So, honorable members, as the minister and the DG have mentioned, we have, with the benefit of hindsight, recognized that perhaps how we have been going about providing support to the small business sector is not the best that we can do. And therefore, we thought long and hard about how best could we provide this support, hence the decision consciously to develop this portfolio approach. Because we thought that what we have is all over the place, whereas if we do this portfolio approach and provide support according to the different stages of the business life cycle, we'll be in a good position for us to identify the gaps and be able to provide tailor-made support to these small enterprises and cooperatives. So that's the one generic point I want to make. And the second one linked to Honorable Mwabe's question about a possible partnership with the NYDA, as they have this database of unemployed youth. Thank you very much for that, Honorable Mwabe. I must confess that we have not had a discussion with the NYDA about the fund, about the portfolio approach specifically. But what I will have the committee know is that the decision is that this cannot be done by the department, CEDA and CIFA alone. Therefore, we will leverage from our strategic partnerships with the private sector government and its entities. So if we have a program on supporting businesses in the startup phase of the business life cycle, we have made provision for us to be able to open conversations with whoever is a relevant role player who can assist us in that regard. So, Honorable Nabe will indeed make an effort to have a discussion with NYDA. The Minister has already spoken to the question about why it took so long for the penny to drop. But to add to what the Minister has said, the Honorable Member will recall that when the report came, some of the decisions that were taken then were indeed implemented and some programs were moved, like the Centers for Entrepreneurship. We moved that program and it's now run by CEDA. But as the Minister said, we then took a while to implement the report in its entirety. Absence of recognition of what's happening in the private sector. We are aware, Honorable Chance, of what is happening in the private sector, especially what some companies are doing. But what we have found in the conversations that we have had with some companies in the private space is that some of them focus mainly in the businesses who operate in the growth and mature stages of development. The private sector view, well, let me not say the private sector, but some of the company views that we have interacted with is that it is, I would say, easy for them to work with these guys because it is companies that are ready to partake and be part of their value chains. And because it is easy for them to work with companies who are already in the growth and mature stages of development, they then work with a lot of those because they don't have the burden of having to support guys who are in the startup phase, because most of those guys still need development in the various stages of running a business, and most of them cannot provide the qualities and the quantities that are provided by, that are required, sorry, by the private sector. On the number of enterprises that are needed, when we've had proposals from, well, I'm aware of one proposal of a company that has offered to work with us in order to establish as many SMMEs and cooperatives as possible so that we can march towards this number that is being recommended would be a good number to start. So we are not sitting down and twiddling our thumbs about this. We are trying to forge strategic partnerships that will help us to reach this goal. Are the agencies best placed to disperse these funds? In our discussions with the agencies on the programs that we are considering moving to them, they have been the first to say they will need to look at their systems and see if they have the capacity and ability to disperse these funds. I'll make an example about the craft sector program, whose funds are dispersed through the IDC. So our idea is that this will be moved to CEDA. And CEDA said, we'll be more than happy to have the program here and disperse the funds. We are just not sure about the small matter of our ability and capacity to disperse, but we will look at our systems, look at our capacity and capability, and we'll make a determination about the best way to move forward. So, Honorable Chance, we are alive to that possibility that we may not have, the agencies may not have the capacity, but where that has been identified, we will work together to ensure that they put in place systems for them to be able to function optimally. On the development of entrepreneurship, we have a
enterprise incubation program. We have consulted universities, for instance, and we had a roundtable discussion about how we could best ignite a spirit of entrepreneurship in the country, because we are aware that, according to the report, we do not fare very well, and therefore we need to make a meaningful contribution or effort towards improving our participation there. So the department is currently consulting on that, and we are working on a framework which will be based on the strategy, aptly called the integrated strategy, on the promotion of small enterprises and entrepreneurship. As the DG has mentioned previously, the strategy is in the process of being reviewed and amended. So we will include a very strong element on how the department and government at large will go about ameliorating its efforts towards improving entrepreneurship in the country. Support at local government level. We have spoken previously in this forum about our LED unit that has led our work in terms of partnering with municipalities and relevant stakeholders from the private sector will partake in that space, and we will continue to nurture those relationships so that we are able to do what we want to do at that level of government. And the DG, as you know, has their coordination forums where we bring in people from national and provincial government, and we help there to pass down the message from the department to provincial government so that that message can cascade to their respective spheres of local government. And the minister hosted, together with the minister of COCTA, an LED summit, and we are in the process now of looking at those recommendations that emanated from the summit. So those will also assist us in the discharging of this responsibility. As I mentioned earlier, private sector value chains, we are talking to a lot of private companies with a view to get SMEs and cooperatives participating in their value chains. I do not have all the list of the private companies that we are talking to, but we have started conversations with the likes of Santam and Baloworld. So we are in the process of ensuring that SME is taking that space. The beautiful thing about the presentation today is that this is a proposal, as the minister has rightly pointed out. So we welcome the remarks and the proposals about how we could improve what we want to offer in terms of the mature phase of the business life cycle, and what we still need to do in order to improve our cooperative support. And I know that the colleagues in the cooperatives unit are looking at improving our support to the secondary cooperatives. I just do not have the details at the top of my head right now. No reference to the CEO's fund. Honorable Chance, I have you know that we have had a discussion with the CEO's fund, and we have made a commitment between ourselves that we will work together moving forward. They did inform us about the objectives of the fund, and I will have you know that the objectives of their fund, if my memory serves me well, would fit in nicely with what we're trying to do to support businesses in the growth and mature stages of development, because they are not looking at pre or startup. Theirs is very clear. They want to work with enterprises that are in the growth and mature stages of development. But we have had, I think, two meetings with them, and the minister also met with the CEO. So we have good relations with them, but we thought that it would not be a great to take our relationship with them forward, we are more than open to that. Again, the department, together with National Treasury and DST, Department of Science and Technology, are talking on the SMME fund. What do we call it? Yeah, I think SMME fund. It hasn't been christened with a proper name. I think the name changes every now and then. So we are engaging, and the components of the fund include venture capital funding, very different types of funding depending on the stage of development of the particular business that will be supported. So this component of a venture capital fund, Honorable Chance, will be well taken care of in the fund, which I'm sure the Minister, DM and DG will at some point have an opportunity to brief the committee. Tourism rates in a lot of numbers, so they are definitely part of the sectors and industries that we are targeting as a department. Why did we discontinue FinFind? FinFind has not been discontinued, Honorable Member, to the best of my recollection. In fact, they are continuing with their services. They are still very much part of the ecosystem, but I will share information that FinFind is part of what we are trying to do moving forward as a department. We are working on developing an SMME database and rating system. While we are doing that, we caught wind of the fact that the services CETA was also working on an online ecosystem geared towards providing support to the small business sector. And so we took a decision consciously, having received guidance from our bosses, that these two programs have very similar fields or objectives and designs. So the decision was that we should sit together and try to design one system that will include the components of the online ecosystem that the services CETA was working on and the elements of the SMME database that we were working on as a department. So we are currently, together with the services CETA, CIFA and CEDA, working on developing a beautiful online platform that will be useful to both suppliers, that will help with the supply and demand side of small business development. So this is work in progress, and the key elements of FinFind will also be incorporated into that platform. The cost of this plan, Honorable Kruger, has not been determined as yet, but what we have done, we have looked at the assortment of packages that we as the portfolio provide, and as I said earlier, some of the programs will be moving, so at the top of our minds when we cost the program and develop our APPs as we have done, is we will consider the programs that are moving and the relative budgets that will be moved with the programs. You will recall that we said the department will be responsible for policy formulation, strategy, as well as M&E. So we still have to identify the amounts that are linked to the elements that we as a department will keep and continue to discharge moving forward. The minister has already answered the strategic plan. I will leave it there for now, Chairperson. I think we have covered most of the questions.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson, and thanks for the input. My questions are, to what degree has the plan taken into account the fact that SPASA shops nationally are declining at a very high rapid rate. Only those that are utilized by people from outside the country are thriving. Yeah, let me use the word thriving, while those that are owned by South Africans are rapidly dying. So to what degree is that challenge taken on board? And then the second part, my second question is, I don't know whether I'm becoming too detailed, but recycling is one area that has opportunities, and to what degree has that been taken into account as we speak to this plan? And then, but when I spoke of spaza shops, I also want to speak to informal businesses, the hawkers, etc. How are they fitting into this plan? Then my last question is that the spheres, the spheres of government in working on this, did we take into account at all times the three spheres so that we move with our eyes on the three spheres all the time? And let me last end with local government in particular, in as far as it is a provider of infrastructure. Did we also move with it, taking it into account? Thanks, Colette.
Chair.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the responses, Minister and Zo. Just one further point in relation to the answer to the question on FinFind. The services CETA's online ecosystem, the merger with yours, does that take into account the existence of VentureCentral.co.za, which is a portal sounding very much like what you're trying to do? And it was created by Simadisa, who this committee will know I've spoken about many, many times. And it's still, I find extraordinary that Simadisa has the strategic partnership with the Department of Science and Technology, not with the Department of Small Business Development. So I would strongly urge that duplication be avoided at all costs, and that instead of doing all this stuff again, you talk to Simadisa, who are an NPO, and say, how can we help build this ecosystem and this portal? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. So, Honourable Mabasa, on the issue of our support to spaza shops, we have the strategy called the National Informal Business Upliftment Strategy, and one of its pillars is enterprise development, and we have that incentive called the Informal and Micro Enterprise Development Program, which was developed precisely in order for the department to provide the support that you are referring to spazas. We are the first ones to admit that we have not implemented neighbors properly, and that's why the decision was taken consciously that maybe we should do away with some of the implementation elements of our support packages so that we can do proper M&E and identify the areas where we are lagging behind. And I will confess that our support to Pazashok has not been the best, and that's why we are saying in the next financial year we will bend over backwards to ensure that we implement NIBAS to the best of our ability, 150%. Linked to the issue around the thriving performance of the foreign-owned Pazashok, we have considered that, and I know that the minister and some of our colleagues have been in discussions about how we could look at the models of the foreign-owned, and we have seen now that some of the big guys like ShopRite and Pick n Pay are also starting to dabble in this space now, so we are looking at that carefully and we are worried about it. And that's why we are saying in the next financial year, we will put a concerted effort towards providing the support that we have through IMEDP to spaza shops and informal traders. So we have the instrument, Honorable Mabasa, but we have not implemented it optimally. That much I can say. To what degree did we take into account the opportunities in recycling? We did not discuss this one specifically, Honorable Mabasa, and I can take it back to my colleagues and we can see how best we can infuse it into our plan. Our plan is quite flexible, and I am sure within the various support packages we'll be able to find space if needed. So the informal businesses, together with the Pazashops, Honorable Mabasa, will be catered for under NIBAS through the IMEDP. Did we consider the three spheres of government? Yes, Honorable Mabasa, we said at the beginning that we want all the relevant role players in the small business space to come on board and assist with the development of this plan. And of course, before we look at the private sector, we look at the available mechanisms within the system of government that we can utilize so that we can implement the plan effectively. So as we said, the DG has held coordination forums with other DGs in the national department. They send representatives there, and the message is always taken from the department, and we see that they have implemented some of their plans on the development of SMMEs. And of course, we have a provincial coordination committee that does the same. So we have considered the spheres of government. Local government as a provider of infrastructure, yes, we are mindful of that. And that's why, Honorable Mabasa, we have, in our partnerships, partnered with the likes of Makado Municipality, so that we can assist and work together in the provision of infrastructure. But what we noted, I think it was during the development of the 9-point plan, was that as much as the expectation is there, but sometimes this is not always done, so we took it upon ourselves to partner with municipalities so that we can be in a comfortable position that we know that in certain municipalities we have partnered, and thus business infrastructure is being provided. Honorable Chair, on FinFund, so what we decided with the services theater is that we are aware that there are a lot of platforms that are already in the space, and rightly so, we don't want to duplicate what is already there. And during our meeting on the 12th of December last year, we talked about the Simodisa initiative, and we have taken a decision that there will be one of the stakeholders that we will consult, and if there are components of their platform that is relevant or are relevant to what we want to do. We will talk about that and see if there are synergies where we can partner. But I think the point that we want to drive home is we want to have a platform that will be owned by government, by government and its public agencies, where SMMEs and cooperatives can log in for all type of support that they require: business support, market access opportunities, you name them. So we are not ignoring what is already there, Honorable Chang. We are talking to the relevant people, and if we need to partner with anyone, we will consider that and consider the objectives of our partnership. Minister, I'm not sure if there's something you want to add. Okay, thank you. I'll leave it there.
Sorry, safe to say that I think also as a way of information, you know, with this regard to the spaza shops, since the time that we started the interdepartmental process, I know sometimes it might be something very boring, but we move from an interdepartmental plan of looking into this whole issue of foreign-owned spaza shops and the things that happen around there. And we've been pushing for an approach that is beyond just the Department of Small Business Development. Hence, we now have the interministerial. And in the interministerial, the focus was very much more on the security side of things until we pushed for looking into the economic side of things, which therefore pushes us to look into what kind of support do we need on the ground for spaza shops from a regulatory point of view, but more than anything else, it's about also strengthening the local structures in ensuring that the registration, the conducive environment, we've removed it from being just something that has to always come to the Department of Small Business Development without necessarily taking away our responsibility and being the core that belonging to us as part of our core business. So there is a coordinated effort to try and deal with this issue. Actually, the past week I also had to meet with the association, the Pakistan Association of Spaza Shops and all that, and we had a very good discussions. And our view and my view is that we've got agreements that we have signed, MOUs and so forth, but I just feel that it's time we begin to implement those MOUs that we have existing with the different associations. But a focus on supporting South African-owned spaza shops is core. And Nibus is very unfortunate, obviously, that we had to find ourselves in that space where we thought partnering with CETA, what is it, the retail CETA, we thought that partnering with the retail CETA is going to help us, but unfortunately it ended up not in a very good way, where the retail CETA itself had to find itself under administration. And I've had long discussions, I had discussions with the previous minister, and I've had the discussions with the new minister in a way of finding, because I think that the possibility and the opportunity of them supporting us is great, but there were other issues, things that went not in the right direction on that side. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry to be taking time. I must say, Comrade Chair, that when it comes to spaza shops, my observation is that we are losing that battle on a daily basis. It's so terrible. It's actually very painful. I'm even afraid that when they have misplaced us completely, they will invade into that area of the informal businesses. When I say informal here, I'm referring to those that are selling tomatoes and onions and some few oranges at the corner of a street, at the bus stop, at the park station, so that I think the challenge that we face is we must not give up in terms of how can we support our spaza shops to rise so that they compete with the foreign owned ones, but at the same time, how can we support the informal businesses? And when I say this, I don't want to pretend that it will be easy. I myself, when I look at them selling at various spots, you know, with their five carriages bent by the sun, I also look at them and say, hey, you know, I'm not very sure that how can I support them. But we must look at this as a big challenge. Otherwise, they will go the same route as the spaza shops. Thanks, Comrade Chair. And our police, also now I'm making an essay, but our police are also, I don't know whether Wanigwa Jojo, they also assist in displacing the local owned spaza shops. In one house in our area, they just studied and realized that that house is child headed. And then they started giving some money and some veggies to those child-headed family, and in no time, then they dropped the whole container and said, we will give you rent of 2,000 rands every month. And by the time the uncles woke up, it is the elephant that is there, and the elephant is now refusing to move, and the police are helping the elephant to stay intact. They say, don't worry.
Thank you. Time constraints because we have another presentation, and I would have loved to get deeper into what Honorable Mabasa is raising. I must commend the presentation. There is a movement and improvement. I just want to point a few issues for your consideration, Minister, Deputy Minister, and also on the 9th of July, 2012, when the function of development of cooperatives was still under DTI, it was pronounced that the Cooperative Amendment Bill would result in the establishment of the Cooperative Development Agency. That was 2012. We are in 2018. We are still recommending on slide number 18 that the Cooperative Development Agency should be established under and incubated within CEDA. I'm not going to go deeper today to question that. I'm just going to put a question for you to consider, not today, that is your approach to cooperative development a narrow perspective of developing cooperatives, or it is a broader perspective of positioning cooperatives as one of the three pillars that drive the transformation of the economy from being dominated by capitalism and make it a mixed economy? And if the approach takes into consideration that
cooperatives are actually a pillar for enabling community to establish community-owned enterprises. This recommendation would not be on this slide. Consider, in its current form, would not incubate the cooperative development agency, where the agency itself is to broaden the perspective in South Africa of what a cooperative is and the role that has to be played by the cooperative in the transformation of the economy to bring about a mixed economy in South Africa. You won't be able to respond to this question. Go and read books and policies of the African National Congress for you to be able to respond to this question that I'm posing today. The second issue is that your integrated cooperative development model doesn't speak about resuscitating the already dead 88% cooperatives in South Africa. It talks about the pre-formation, the formation, the business opportunity, the growth and expansion, and agglomeration. The problem that we are sitting with in South Africa is that there is 88% failure rate of cooperatives, and money is still being pumped in the same way it was done, which resulted with that 88% failure rate. I would have expected an approach that begins to address that, because that is the problem that we are sitting with. So shifting the CIS and making it go under CEDA and CIFA is not going to address the problem, because you lack the instruments that are actually going to enable you to deal with the problem, the causes of the problem. The cause of the problem is not that the CIS is in the department. The cause of the problem is the narrow perspective of what a cooperative seeks to do in South Africa. And this integrated cooperative development model doesn't speak to a broader perspective. The last comment that I would want to make is that this Resolution 55 of the tracking tool was aimed, what we were discussing with you was that the program, the review of the program, should seek to reconfigure and prioritize the process of which will lead to reduced expenditure and making savings. In other words, there are programs and funding that needs to be aligned to the felt needs so that we can begin to save. Let me make just an example, a specific example. I took your team to Tatane. In Tatane, all that was wanted was a funding for feasibility study. There was already an investor. There was a pre-feasibility study that was pointing out at what enterprises were going to be developed there. And the investor that wanted to partner with the secondary cooperative was agreeing that the kind of investment that is needed in that world is 1.2 billion. There is no cooperative that can be funded by the department with 1.2 billion. But a private sector investor was prepared to put in 20% so as to unlock commercial funding. But because the department had a narrow perspective, didn't see the need to say, we can cut the CIF and shift the budget and fund feasibility studies, because with the feasibility study and the master plan, we are attracting private investors to come and partner with communities for establishment of community-owned enterprises. That is a broader perspective. So it's not going to help to dish developing community. It's not going to transform the economy in this country. So I want you to come back. Separate SMMEs and cooperatives. Talk about cooperatives as a tool for economic transformation and bringing about a mixed economy in South Africa, because this situation we are at is that South Africa is dominated by capitalism, and communities need to participate in the mainstream of the economy. And what will make communities to have community-owned enterprises is cooperative. The ruling party chose cooperative to facilitate that situation to happen. So it can be done in a different way. So this is good on the SMME side. 3 out of 10 on the cooperative side. There is improvement, but we want the first gear. Thank you very much, Honorable Chan.
Sorry, Chair, I won't be long. I just wanted to take this opportunity, since we're on this topic of cooperatives, to refer to the email that we received from the Bellini 12. You may have seen it. They have requested that this committee attend to the... Okay. Yeah, well, that's the Free State, not KZN.
You can't come in there because it's related.
Yeah, all right. Well, just so long as we don't leave it off the agenda, please. And I have to leave early at 6:10, if you don't mind, Chair. Thank you.
Can we then agree on time frame in terms of the follow-up on the cooperative development side, because we can't leave that thing hanging off a cooperative development agency that still has to go and be incubated by CEDA, when we all know also with there is an issue of training people who are actually trained in cooperative development as part of community economic development. Time frame? Pardon me? I need to see first Jalili, I say 4 weeks. Bueno.
I just want to...
Honorable Cooper, you are taking him off.
No, I don't. Because, remember I mentioned the APPs. So there's no time. I mean, we must start with our budget debates and all that. So there's actually... I don't let him off the hook. He must come back to us in next week.
I wanted him to commit to that.
Yeah, but I mean,
he must actually take the rope and hang himself.
Yeah.
You don't need to give him that.
4 weeks.
He must hang himself. When?
I need to talk to the DG and the DG on this one. Yes,
can I
ask
you?
Yes.
Can we get a written response and a commitment by next week in our meeting? The response that you'll be giving us is a commitment on by when shall we get a real review of the cooperative sector in the department. Sure. Can we then move to the next presentation? Break? Comfort break, okay. 10 minutes comfort break. To the time constraint and the flight of food and the delegation from SAFER had actually shifted their they were initially scheduled to take 6 o'clock flight, but now they are on 8 o'clock flight. And we know it's challenging here airport. During the break, I had a conversation with the CEO around that to find the best way of handling this. My view is that they can briefly take us through to what is it that they were responding to, what is the approach, and then agree on a date on which we can then come back and go through all this, because we would want to give quality time. And I'm happy that the minister is here and the deputy minister, and also there's more delegation from SAFER than the CEO. If in our oversight visit we were actually taking video, you would understand where we come from when we say let us look at this thing. Let us look at this issue, because we can't, as members of this portfolio committee, be confronted with tears each and every time we go on the field around SAFER, and we also end up crying. So we want SAFER to get an in-depth understanding of what situations we come across, and then for SAFER to also talk to us in relation of how does SAFER see itself changing that perception about SAFER. Because we know what it is. When you are established, you fall under DTI. It did it now. When you were established, okay, then you fell under EDT. And then you also are established as a subsidiary company. Okay. You are in a new home now. And there is a different thinking and a different way of looking at issues. We don't see you, SAFER, as a financial institute that is more about profit. We see you as a developmental financial institute that is more about you. To us, you look like you are more like a Nyaya's laptop. Do you know lactogen? Those who are young will not know lactogen and claim. They will only know NAN and something.
You are that. So, the perspective of profit and development needs to be clarified as to what is our primary objective. If our primary objective is to create more jobs and reduce severe poverty in South Africa, DFI have to play a different role from the role that is played by Amabel. Now, so that's why we think that we need more time to sit down with you. These cases that we said look at them, we were actually saying, if this is what is happening, surely there is a need to relook at ourselves. And when we say ourselves, we are saying, let us start from the government. Let us start from the parliament. We need to emphasize parliament, government, the department, agencies. Are we structured in a way that addresses the felt problems, by felt challenges and the felt needs by the people that we are created to service? So I don't want us here to kube ukuthi omunye ukhomba omunye ehle nomunye uvikele ihlo lakhe. We must look at ourselves as, when we look at ourselves today, do we feel that if we continue in the manner we do things, we are really addressing issue of funding for small businesses in South Africa? So that if there is a need to review legislation, we go that route. If there is a need to review even the mandate, we go that route. If there is a need to provide new training, we go that route. But we can't continue in the manner in which we do things, and we go out to that field and find people that are crying. Finally, must come with abantu bacule, bajabule, bathi hey, afika amalunga eParliament azobona umsebenzi omuhle, which was done by the department, which was done by CEDA, which was done by... We shouldn't be going to communities that are crying, and some are closing their doors, but they don't want to see us. It shouldn't be like that. So, over to you, Sifa. Tell us how you had structured your presentation so that we can shorten this meeting and give quality time to the issues that we need to discuss relating to the services that are provided by SAFE.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister and the Deputy Minister. The format of the presentation that we were going to make today was to take through the how do we approach the business rescue. The brief was that we need to come and share with the committee business rescue strategy in general, as well as the remedial action insofar as the visit to the Free State is concerned. So from my perspective was to really take you through how do we approach business strategy, but look it from the not from a business rescue perspective, but from workout and restructuring. What is it that we do when we have got clients that are in financially distressed, clients that have been funded by SIFA? When a client is having a problem post the disbursement of funds, when the time for the client to start paying. Would the client pay and then having challenges, how do we address that until we go into the stage of litigation if need be? So that is really the approach that I wanted to look at. And thereafter, at the end of the presentation, was to share with the portfolio committee the outcome, what is it that happened to date. The report that the portfolio committee has issued, my take was that I was not going to agitate what is already in the report, was to take through on issues relating to CIFA, what happens post this report. That's how I was looking, just to give you the status update on the clients, particularly the clients that we have met, Mambota, and then it's Mambota and Kazakhstan, and the other one that is not on the presentation, Tiny Kinky Trading, the one for Pan Senegal. So the approach was to that, which maybe if the chair can give you maybe the brief, I can just take briefly and then we can still come back for details. Okay, thank you very much. Then if you go to slide number 3, really the approach insofar as the defaulting clients or debtors are concerned is that we try to assist clients as far as possible, and we do not as CIFA initiate business rescue. We normally follow those who would have entered into a business rescue on clients that have been funded by CIFA, but also all other creditors. So CIFA as a whole would not go into business rescue, because when we feel that we need to CIFA ourselves, what is it as a DFI that we can do to rescue the client? Because the moment you take the client to the business rescue, it's under the business rescue practitioners in protecting other creditors. So the route that we usually follow is say, this client has not been performing. What is it what we have done to make the client to come back to a normal type of transaction, which we call post-investment workout and restructuring, and try and follow that in line with the National Credit Act where possible. And in cases where clients engage with ourselves and they provide reasonable proposal, when they are in distress, we try to understand what are the challenges that the clients are facing. It might be maybe the amount of installment that they pay is too high, they are not able to afford. It might just be their own suppliers or their own customers are not able to pay them. And as a result, how can we then reasonably take their proposition? But where the client is not coming back, they are not engaging, etc. As a credit estate mechanism, we then trigger in certain legal activities, which include some of the things that I'm going to highlight in terms of our maybe letters of demand, amongst others. Slide 4 just really encapsulates what we see on the business rescue in general. We see that when a business has got a chance to survive economically, but however there might be some challenges, maybe technical challenges or market challenges that hinder the client to survive, and the client is owing us or any other creditors, what would be the best way to look at it? First, initially look at how to restructure that client, what are the turnaround mechanisms that have been put in place, and then thereafter the business rescue intervention, which, as I said, CIFA does not really initiate the intervention. And then I'm just really paraphrasing for now, Honourable Chairperson. So if you go to slide number 4, just really look in terms of what is it that is not applicable to all the defaulting clients. Business rescue is not applicable for clients that are already insolvent, for example. So if a client is insolvent, their liabilities exceed their assets, there are a lot of other challenges, and then or the client already in a position not to honor the debts, and the business rescue would not work. And for a DFI, as I said, we feel that before taking the client to a business rescue, it's better for us to address to see how best we can take a look at the challenges that the clients can do. And then one of these is what that I've mentioned in terms of restructuring the payment terms for the facility to the client. But there are instances where maybe clients who acted in bad faith, and they realized that, no, this client, even if you take the business rescue as a mechanism, it may not be able to succeed. The next slide does that really look in terms of the proceeding that might be initiated when the company is going into a business rescue, whether this is done by the company itself voluntarily or by the creditors themselves, to really look at that. So from a CIFA point of view, as I said, we don't initiate the business rescue. We tag along or we follow those that we have initiated. And then, but in most cases, if other creditors, we are concurrent with other creditors decide to either take a client to business rescue or liquidation, all what we do is that we do not, in most cases, oppose that business rescue initiative that is done by others. But our preference is really to see how to restructure the facility. For example, for the year ended 2016-17, about 40 clients have been restructured to the total value of 90 million. This will be the clients that were struggling to pay, and then they have already exceeded days in which they need to pay, and we say we need to try to restructure them, bring them into normality, and then changing the installment activities. And next slide, 7, just look in terms of the challenges on the typical challenges that one will encounter in the business rescue. There are instances where clients for file business rescue without us aware of that possibility may exist, that we pick up that certain clients that we might have supported, they went to file a business rescue, and then CIFA is not aware of, but as I said, we don't always oppose that. And then we also pick up that the business rescue as a new mechanism in terms of companies access got is challenged in terms of the understanding from a client, our client point of view on how the business rescue is working, and then the costly exercise that it entails, because there are costs that you need to pay to the business rescue practitioners. Hence, we feel that not trying to help the client ourselves internally without going to a formalized business rescue approach. And then in the CIFA portfolio, we have got about 7 clients where they were taken for business rescue, and we tag along. And this represents a value of about 22 million. It consists of about 4% of our direct lending book for those that are in the business rescue process. And in most of these loans are longer than 48 months in terms of outstanding arrears, which is equivalent to more than 180 days. And these loans were approved around 2013, 2014, 2015, and in the provinces mentioned, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and the Northern Cape. And it's largely term loans and the installment sale among those that we, the instruments that we support. But now coming into what do we do on the workout and restructuring, CIFA didn't have a post-investment as a standalone division. So we decided that in April 2016, as part of our, for us, as the book has grown significantly for us to monitor, let us not apply credit to grave, meaning the deal makers that work on the transaction, they look at it and from the beginning until the end. So we decided that there is a need to form a separate unit that is dedicated, separate from those that have brought the transaction for approval into the organization. So on the 1st of April 2016, we started the division, and then we also went into mentorship program to identify mentors, but to deal and engage specifically with clients that have been funded by CIFA, and also to help to facilitate the restructuring of the facility. In the wholesale side, from post-investment, we engage largely with the intermediaries as conduits to lend to the small businesses, but direct lending is when the team engage directly with the clients that have received funding from CIFA. So the next slide, in terms of the role, really, the role of the department is really to monitor. It's monitoring the portfolio. Monitoring the portfolio after the disbursement, after the money has been disbursed, for example, if you disburse within a month, you need to go and visit the client and see what is happening. So they look at the portfolio, they work out and restructure the transaction, They look at mentorship in collaboration with the monitors. They look at the risk of the profile of the client that are in there when they migrate from one risk to another. And most importantly, also look at collections. Every now and then calling the clients to say, we are looking for, please, when are you going to pay what is due at a particular point in time? So it's really the role that is standalone, which this has to be done within the division that originally initiated the loan facility. The next slide, we start with standard operating procedure, is just to give what is it that really internally happens once we disburse. When a loan is paid out, you have the client has been approved, you have disbursed the money to the client. What then entails after that? The activities, the first client visit that we need to make, and then also looking at the repayment of the loan, following up on the loan, identifying in terms of the challenges that the client is facing. So the critical other element is now standard operation procedure from a legal process. What do we do when we realize that the client is not able to pay? First step is to send a letter. The engagement will be taking place from time to time, because as I said, the post-investment collection will be engaging with the client through the phone, why are you not paying, what's happening, etc. If nothing is taking place, as a trigger and as a deterrent, you send an LOD, a letter of demand to the client to say, please, because we are required in terms of the National Credit Act to ensure that we reminded the client that the amount is due. And then when the client has not responded to the letter of demand, we either look in terms of another deterrent, send summons to the client, and then also maybe engage the debt collectors. If nothing has happened unto that, we'll take the client for a judgment. This also incorporates putting client on a credit bureau, for example, and then court proceeding. And if you want to execute, normally the last stage of warrant of execution, adjustments of assets, sale in execution, would do that as a last resort. The judgments, etc., would try to make the client trigger that this element of non-payment is crucial for the organization, so that we need to be able to recoup, for us to be able to lend to other clients looking for funding. And we need to, our policy says that these clients must sit in our books until we have exhausted everything. We need to follow them. I mean, even if the client is over 180 days, let's follow them, etc. All process needs to take place before we can decide to write off the facilities. So some of the challenges that we face as an institution, particularly around when we do the monitoring of the clients, is that if money goes into a client bank account today, because us not having a bank and not having an intelligent mechanism to pick up what is happening on the client's bank account, it's difficult for us to really know whether the client has got sufficient money to pay or not at real-time perspective. So we normally at the back foot, unlike banks, when money goes in, they can be able to sweep that cash that is there. So for us, it takes time for us to really, until we wait to receive the bank statements. So some of the challenges that there are certain instances where maybe the cooperation between ourselves, the clients, and then less disclosure. Sometimes clients is in difficulties, is in problem, maybe not engaging in terms of what are the challenges. Hence now the need for us to intensify, to be proactive and go and identify those challenges. In instances where we have maybe sessions and the sessions are not enforceable, the payment of the facility is becoming a challenge, and other internal challenges that we face in terms of as we are growing this unit, because it's a relatively new unit. And then for it to be able to look at all the clients that we have, we need to capacitate and ensure that we have got the necessary competence and skills to manage the entire portfolio. So, Chair, the ensuing slides, really, they are just talking about the now going more granular in terms of what we do on the monitoring side of the business. What happened when the different approach to monitoring, and then look at the what is it that the
typical report on the collection side. What how do we do collections when we, for example, we will send SMSs as a way of reminding contacts, money statements, etc. And then what do we do to restructure, etc., from a granular point of view. And then mentoring from a mentorship point of view. What is it that we derive from the mentors? What are the reports that come from the mentors that are looking at the client? And what are the typical lessons learned from time to time that we pick up from clients? What is it that we do when the client falls in arrears and any other challenges that we face? So, in a nutshell, that on the post investment monitoring, following up the reports on the visits by ourselves, the mentors, etc. That's what it entails. So that is on the first part. Remember, for now, I'm just giving a paraphrase, Chair, as you indicated. The next one was just to give a high level update on the clients that we have visited in the Free State, and I've asked Paul Maboa to do the presentation. I have.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Minister. I'll simply start with the clients that we need to make an update on after the members of the Portfolio Committee visit the Free State province, and subsequent to that, what is it that has happened? After we got a request from the Portfolio Committee to look at ways and means as to how we can assist. The first one is Mom Butler. Previous, I will assume that, not decide that, I assume that the committee members knows about exactly what has happened there. Actually, we had gone up to a stage where we issued summonses, we got judgment against the company and the surety, meaning the shareholder or the member, and we issued a writ or a warrant of execution. And the sheriff went to attach whatever assets were attachable as a result of the judgment that we got. But subsequent to that, we got a request from the Portfolio Committee after his visit to Free State that we should look at means as to how we can sort of assist the client to resolve the problem there. Then on the spot, we decided to suspend any further legal action. The attachment of the client's assets as well as the surety was uplifted. Nothing is under attachment as we speak now. But we are trying to engage the client as to how we can find ways and means of resolving this particular problem. That is it. That is where we are at the moment. But we are still waiting for the client to come back to us with a proposal. The second one is Karatek. Same applies to Karatek. We had gone to a stage where we issued a letter of demand, we got judgment, we issued a warrant of execution. We were on the verge of disposing of the assets that we have attached, which includes immovable property, that is a factory as well as the equipment. As a result of the request that we got from the Portfolio Committee, we also decided to suspend the legal action pending further engagement or negotiations between the client and CIFA as to how the client is going to redeem that particular facility. Obviously, it has to be on terms and conditions that will be acceptable to the client to afford. But that's where we are at the moment. Then the next client that we had a problem with is Red Mill. As far as Red Mill is concerned, we proceeded to bring an application before the High Court in Bloemfontein to perfect or attach the debtor's book that has been ceded to CIFA by Red Mill as security in respect of the facility that we advance. But now, during the proceedings at the court, the judge indicated that we should sort of find a way of meeting each other halfway and discuss as to whether how can we resolve this particular matter. Then we had to adjourn. We reached a settlement, which was made an order of the court, that the client has to, one, make payments of 500,000 rand each per month for a period of 6 months, two, provide CIFA with its monthly management statements and accounts, as well as its list of debtors. But the client up to now has only made payments of 500,000 rand per month for a period of 6 months. But even up to date, she has failed to comply with the other three conditions. And unfortunately, this one happens to be a very difficult client and so on. But now, the current status as it is now, we have gone back to court to say to the court that we now want to enforce our rights in terms of the court order, as the client is not cooperating. Because after a period of 6 months, she was supposed, or her company was supposed, to be making a payment of 250,000 rand per month and plus interest until the whole debt of 45 million rand has been fully redeemed. The unfortunate part of it is that we are trying to engage the client and she's not responding positively. That's where we are at the moment, but we are trying to engage her as well. But now we have decided to go back to court and I like to record that despite the deed of settlement that we signed, the client is not cooperating with the court order that is in place because it's for the benefit of both parties. That's where we are at the moment, Chair, with the three clients. Then there is other client. This one is not in litigation. It's just that she applied to CIFA for a facility. And apparently, from our approval committee, MENCOM, or credit committee, she did not fully meet our finding criteria, because this particular application came to the committee for second time. Still, she could not. As a result of that, she decided. She decided to go to approach the Constitutional Court. Yes, she decided to approach the Constitutional Court in November 2017. She brought an application in order to have access to the court, but the court indicated that the court actually dismissed the application to say that it can't grant her access. She has to follow the normal process. Based on that, the matter was dismissed by the court. Thereafter, in January 2018, despite the dismissal of her application to be granted access to approach the Constitutional Court, she decided to approach the Public Protector's Office. And fortunately, the public protector approached us as well, contacted us and said, you know what, there's a client who complained about you and so on, who lodged a complaint. Now, we are requested to come to our offices and let's discuss this particular matter and to establish whether we can reach a solution. As a result of that, the presentation was made to the public protector by both parties. The outcome from the public protector was that he was left with no option but to dismiss the complaint, the client's complaint, as having no merit at all. Thank you, Chair. There's nothing more I can present on, except that I think when the CEO comes back, maybe we'll be in a position to finish further development as these matters are concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kruger.
Ma'am, it seems like Tinky used too much of products in the tavern, you know. it's just a joke. Seems like Tinky's managed to drink too much of her own.
Is it, the reason for us to want more time to discuss this is that in those presentation, he highlights that there is now an integrated planning approach introduced by the department, which seeks to bring a common thinking between the department, CEDA and CIFA. And we appreciate that the department is bringing that up. It actually responds to cases of this nature, where although CIFA is a twin to CEDA, but in some instances, CIFA would just focus on its mandate and deal with clients in terms of the mandate of CIFA and forget that there is a role that has to be played by CEDA in assisting the client that has to approach CIFA. In some instances, CIFA would also just focus on the application of the law and forget that there is a service that could have been provided by the department through other instruments that are sitting in the department. And we wanted CIFA to get that understanding that you are not working in isolation. You are part of the body. And the body that you are part of is the Economic Transformation Cluster. And this Economic Transformation Cluster has got on top as a head, the Department of Small Business Development. On the other side, there is an arm called CIFA. On one side, there is an arm called CEDA. But other parts of this board called Economic Transformation are located in other departments that this department is part of that family. Other parts of this body are located in other spheres of government. And without that understanding, there will be no way of assisting, because Nina Nisira ne loan, and the loan has to be reduced in the best possible way. Have a creative way of ensuring that this person who needs a startup funding loan doesn't get a loan for things that could have been accessed through a grant. Doesn't pay for services that could have been paid for by another part of the board. And when you came over to the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development to account to him, we realized, Uthi, that you were not thinking of this. You were not thinking in that way. From where you were, the other home wasn't thinking in that way, because they are not dealing with newborn babies, infants. Economic development is at another level. Small business is at a different level, is at a level of a person who walks into the door of small business, not even having a business plan, just having an idea, and wanting to be assisted to write a business plan. A person who walks into that door, not even understanding how to register a company, and wanting that department to assist him or her to register a company. So you are in a different world from the world of economic development. So we hear all this. We hear and we think we are going to engage 2, 3 and even maybe 4 or 5 times before you arrive at where we are in terms of our understanding of what you are supposed to be doing and how you can reduce the exposure of small businesses on loans that have got a high interest rate. Yes, we're saying it, Jayin. Gala Huno says in the Department of Small Business. Then there is cooperative. Another form of cooperative is cooperative bank. But no one talks about that. What is facilitating the establishment of cooperative banks actually takes away the risk of a non-payment for a loan. Because instead of giving money to intermediaries, you would actually give the money to the cooperative bank. And the cooperative bank has got the same principles of any other cooperative shall cooperate. So if one cooperative goes down, we are shifted to the workers by Israel to a cooperative that is doing well. That doesn't happen in the capitalist world. Doesn't happen. I equal your principle gala kuma capitalist in Gapa. Cooperatives, because our cooperatives are for a totally different agenda. They are for social and community development. Yes, they are businesses, but their agenda is not in profit. So, if ISIFA understood that, beyizosebenza the cooperative development Cooperative Bank Development Agency and push for establishment of cooperative financial institutions and cut Ishema intermediaries, and also work very closely with ISIDA to train people before baqale banikezwe imali, because if they were trained before they were given money, they were not going to experience lama problems lawa we experience. We understand you were accounting to another department, but when we came, the first thing that we saw was that there was no planning together. If you don't know what is going to be said by the Department of Small Business Development and non-small Department of Small Business Development, you don't know what CIFA is going to be saying, go back and meet and plan together, because you can't have a strategic plan that supports the strategic plan of a department, but you did not sit under one roof to actually agree on your priorities of developing small businesses and cooperatives on that particular 5 years. So the point I'm making is that we don't have time. We appreciate, we have an idea. We are not even going to ask questions. We are going to put a date aside so that we can begin to look at how best can we improve in what you are doing. Allow us to share with you what was said to us by those people and what are the things that we saw. Read our report so that we can find solutions to the problems that are experienced by small businesses and cooperatives, because you don't exist for your own existence. You exist for small businesses and cooperatives out there. Do you want to say anything?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just want to mention two things. But we'll elaborate when we come back, as you rightly say. The two things are as follows. I am sitting on a committee where it's in the Department of Small Business Development. What has happened there is that there is a working committee, and maybe the things that are being done have not been reported at a higher level so that they can come here. But what has happened at my level, at an ordinary employee level, is that we have formed three committees that are working in collaboration with the Department of Small Business, CIFA, and CIDA. What are the three things that are happening? We are looking at business rescue for small businesses and cooperatives. The aspect that you mentioned earlier on, to say, but what happens to the cooperatives that have failed? Do you just throw them away? And this small committee or this small function is saying, we need to bring those ones back. And that's the first aspect. And we are looking at post-commencement finance, for example, once we have pulled it back from the failure. How much money does it need? Where can we get that money? And the aspects of funding, that's the one aspect. The second aspect, we're looking at the development of cooperatives. So there is a stream that is looking at cooperatives. And the last stream that is looking at, that is headed by a colleague from CIDA, is on business support. So in a nutshell, we may have been able to escalate the reporting function, but I just wanted to mention that, and maybe that can provide comfort, a small comfort. Thank you, Chair.
I appreciate that. What you are saying, but can we agree that in our next meeting you will also take us through that, so that we will also get this comfort of understanding whether what you are doing is responding to what we are seeing on the ground. This committee now doesn't like going on oversight to be confronted with fears. We would appreciate more going on study tours than the fears that we have seen. And also, now we are very practical. We don't want a situation where committees are meeting and sitting But if we were to go to SHARP, where we went in 2016, we still find those people complaining about the things that they were complaining about. No matter my elections, I've door to door. And when we do door to door, we don't only do door to door to people's houses. We also do door to door to small businesses because they fall under us. We also have something called the constituency period. And we go and see whether you have responded. Sometimes it's good. It takes longer. You sit around tables, you form committees, and you write documents. But it takes very long, too long, to see that what you have discussed in committees happening on the ground. And Tina, we focus more on what is happening on the ground. We appreciate what you are saying, but all that we are saying is that what we saw in Free State and these cases, it's what is happening throughout the country. It's not only happening in Free State. And we need to find solutions to such things. CEO?
Yeah, just a last comment on this one. You have noticed, Chair, that the slides that we put are only related to where there is significant room to improve and where there are a lot of significant challenges. I've read your report thoroughly. I think you've done about 20 of CIFA-owned funded clients. And the report to me is highly positive. If I have to compare this report and your visit to the Mpumalanga in terms of what you found on the ground, I would see in the balance of probabilities, yes, there are those clients where there are bigger challenges, but the report that when I read, and the word made, in such a way the committees were impressed in terms of what they visited. I just thought I should just mention that as I conclude on this. So I see the report very very highly positive and constructive criticism where we need to improve.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I also want to join CIFA CEO in commending really the report. I also took time to read it, but focused more on the recommendations at the end. And I was happy that I hope this is going to be the trend also with CIFA and CIDA in the department in general, you know, because taking the recommendations and presenting remedial action is a very good way that also empowers us in general. Because, as you know, from the very beginning, now I said I see the work that's being done by the portfolio committee is really a constitutional obligation that has to be done, and I don't see it. And I'm saying this because I have to put it on record so that everybody continuously understands that when we have to respond to what the portfolio committee has done from the visits, it's something that's helping our communities. But I also would like to say we need to even reverse the fear that the portfolio committee has, because it's not pleasant for the chairperson to say we are now fearing going to our oversight, and that they are it's a responsibility, it's their task that they need to do. It says to me as a department, and especially after having read this report, it says to me there's got to be that understanding of the purpose why the oversight is done, and therefore the response to the portfolio committee by bringing this remedial. And strangely, when I received the report from, not strangely, when I received the report from my own department, you see that in the signing and the comments, the first thing that I said was, what are the remedial actions? Because at that time, I wasn't aware of the fact that the CIFA had already gone that far. So it just simply says, if we work together with a common understanding of the reason why we have a portfolio committee and why we have to read those documents. To me, it also says it will reduce letters coming from the speaker to me requesting information all the time and telling me this is what you have to do. Because if this is understood not only by myself or the DM or my office overall, if it's understood by the agencies, by the department, it really will make life much, much easy in going forward. Thank you, Chair.
one, we are not going to commit you to any deadline. We will look at our program, because here we are starting with the process of finding a solution. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.